We are good to go. Very good. Thank you very much. Then it is 6 o'clock and I will call to order our Grover Beach City Council meeting for Tuesday, October 12th of 2021. It is 6 p.m. and we are being a virtual meeting given public health conditions and consistent with Assembly Bill number 361. Meetings are being held by teleconference only until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website, as well as on www.slow-span.org. And members of the public may provide public comments during the course of the meeting by calling in at 805-321-6639. And that phone line is currently open. So if you would all join me in a moment of silence, please. And it's for the health and well-being of our first responders, especially those that are fighting fires and dealing with natural disasters throughout the course of the nation and the world. So if you would all take a moment of silence, please. Thank you, everyone, for joining us in that moment of silence. That'll take us to our flag salute. So where if everyone would mute themselves except for our fire chief, Mr. Steve Lieberman, if you would do the honors of the flag salute, please, sir.
Certainly. Mayor and Council, good evening. Steve Lieberman, thank you for this honor. If everyone could cross their heart and in a muted fashion, follow along with myself. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir, for leading us in that flag salute. And that will take us to our roll call. So City Clerk Sims, if you would please.
Councilmember Miller.
Here.
Councilmember Robert.
Here.
Councilmember Rushing.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
I'm here.
Mayor Lee.
I am here as well. So we do have a quorum. So we will go ahead and obviously continue with the meeting. And our next item of business is our closed session announcements. I'll turn to our city attorney to see if we have any closed session announcements from prior meetings.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, this evening we do not have any closed session announcements.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. So at this time, we'll go to our agenda review, where the council will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests or ask questions of the city manager regarding any changes in the order of the day. So does anyone have any questions of the city manager with regards or any suggestions for modifications to the agenda? If not, I'll go ahead and accept a motion to proceed as agendized.
I'll move to proceed.
I'll make that.
I think we had a motion by Councilmember Miller, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Bright. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. We will proceed as published. So that does take us to our ceremonial calendar. We do have two items this evening. So, and first I'll invite Councilmember Miller to read the proclamation for Domestic Violence Action Month. And we, I understand we have, and I apologize if I say your last name incorrectly, but Stacy Salam is here to accept the proclamation after Councilmember Miller has read it into the record.
Right. So proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council declaring the month of October as National Domestic Violence Action Month. Whereas Domestic Violence Action Month calls attention to the fact that sexual and intimate partner violence is widespread and impacts every person in Grover Beach. And whereas RISE and Stand Strong officially merged on July 1st, 2021 to form Lumina Alliance, an agency that serves survivors of sexual and intimate partner violence throughout all of San Luis Obispo County. And whereas, although progress has been made toward preventing and ending domestic violence and providing support to survivors and their families, important work remains to be done. And whereas there is a need to focus on the individualized needs of domestic violence survivors, and whereas the marginalization of certain groups in society, including undocumented individuals, transgender individuals, and those living with disabilities, increase their vulnerability to intimate partner violence, and whereas Lumina Alliance continues to provide a safe environment to those affected by domestic violence with crisis intervention, counseling, education, legal services, and emergency safe housing with the help of dedicated volunteers and professionals. And whereas Lumina Alliance has provided services to more than 1,800 clients in the last year, including more than 8,000 collective nights provided for shelter clients, and more than 6,400 hours of counseling. And whereas Lumina Alliance has created San Luis Obispo's first social marketing campaign, Redefine Slow, refocused on parents and educators of preteen boys in an effort to prioritize frequent and quality conversations on topics such as gender, masculinity, and consent in an effort to prevent violence, harm, and assault in our community. And whereas the City of Grover Beach strongly supports the efforts of Lumina Alliance, however segment of our society can work together to better address intimate partner violence and how to help survivors connect with services. And now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council hereby supports the month of October 2021 as National Domestic Violence Action Month in recognition of the important work done by domestic violence programs. In witness thereof, I have hereunto set my hand, the mayor's hand, and caused the seal of the City of Grover Beach to be affixed this 12th day of October 2021. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Councilmember Miller, for reading that into the record. And I'll invite Stacey Salam to come forward and see if she has any comments that you'd like to make.
Hi, thank you to the mayor and to the City Council for this proclamation. My name is Stacey Solomon. I'm the Director of Communications and Events for Lumina Alliance. Lumina Alliance is a nonprofit organization created by the merger of Rise and Stand Strong in July of 2021. Our mission is to empower those impacted by sexual and intimate partner violence through innovative advocacy, healing, and prevention programs. With our newly formed alliance, we're able to expand our reach and serve all of San Luis Obispo County as one consolidated agency. The merger also allows us to streamline services for those seeking support, ensuring their experience is easy to navigate and trauma-informed. Services include a 24-hour crisis and information line, case management, restraining order assistance, legal assistance, accompaniment and advocacy. We have three emergency shelters. We have transitional housing, individual and group therapy, and a robust prevention education department. So as previously mentioned, October is Domestic Violence Action Month. And this year we're focused on the belief that eliminating gender-based violence is possible if we redefine how love is portrayed and demonstrated in our culture today. Our new Redefine Slow campaign provides resources for parents to engage in conversations with young men and boys about love, communication, and healthy masculinity in an effort to stop violence before it begins. We hope this month inspires our community to start conversations with their families and join us in the effort to eliminate intimate partner violence from our community. We invite you to learn more at redefineslow.org. Lumina Alliance is also hosting several events this month in partnership with Cal Poly Safer. You can stay up to date on DVAM events by following Lumina Alliance on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn, or visiting us at luminaalliance.org. Please remember, if you or anyone you know is experiencing sexual or intimate partner violence and needs help, you can call 805-545-8888 to speak with one of our confidential advocates. In closing, we're so grateful for this proclamation and the ongoing support of the Grover Beach City Council. On behalf of Lumina Alliance's Board of Directors, staff, volunteers, we thank you all for taking action this month to create our vision of a safe, thriving, and equitable community.
Thank you very much for those comments, Ms. Salome. So before I ask any questions, if there's any questions from council members or comments, I'm wondering if you could just reiterate the phone number and the website if people need to access your services.
Sure. The phone number is 805-545-8888, and that's for people who are in crisis or just seeking information, so you don't have to be in crisis to call. And our website is luminaalliance.org.
Very good. Thank you for that information. Let me turn to the council, see if there's any questions or comments. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you do have a question for Ms. Salome. Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mary Lee. Not a question, but a comment. I want to thank the Alliance for the service they provide to our community. I think we've all heard that the rate of domestic violence has increased significantly during COVID-19 and the pandemic. So we really appreciate the service that you provide.
Thank you.
Definitely. Thank you for those comments. I'll see if any other members of the council have questions or comments by unmuting themselves. Councilmember Robert.
Just wanted to thank you also. Giving a place for people to call is very important. It's difficult to reach out for help in situations like that in the first place, but not knowing who or where to call is makes it even harder. So thank you for your service to the community. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we just like to point out that, you know, if you know somebody who's experiencing violence or you might think that there might be warning signs and you just want to ask questions about how to support someone, we're available for that as well.
Very good. That's a great point. So let me check in with other council members, see if there's anyone else who wants to make questions or comments. Very good. I'll just add my thanks and my appreciation to Illumina Alliance and the work that it took to bring two organizations together and continue with seamless services throughout the county. And please keep up the good work. And obviously, this is one of those organizations that we kind of hope doesn't need to be around forever. But until that time, we do appreciate the fact that you are there and providing service to the needy of our county. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very good. So next we will turn to Councilmember Rushing, who will read a proclamation for Red Ribbon Week. And our own Commander Millard is here to accept the proclamation after being read into the record. So Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council declaring the week of October 23rd through October 31st, 2021 as Red Ribbon Week. Whereas tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use and abuse represents a serious public health and safety threat to our city, our county, California, and throughout the United States. And whereas it is important for communities, schools, and individuals throughout San Luis Obispo County to work together to eliminate the demand for these substances and to promote programs that support commitment to a healthy, drug-free lifestyle. And whereas Red Ribbon Celebration will be observed across the United States during Red Ribbon Week, October 23rd through 31st, 2021. And whereas parents, youth, government, businesses, law enforcement, schools, religious institutions, service organizations, socials, health services, media, and the general public will demonstrate their commitment to drug-free communities by wearing and displaying red ribbons during this observance. And whereas Red Ribbon Week highlights local substance abuse prevention programs that involve youth and parents yearly through local community coalitions and numerous countywide organizations, and also recognizes this year's theme, Drug-Free Looks Like Me. And whereas the City of Grover Beach further commits resources to help success of the Red Ribbon Celebration and year-round tobacco, alcohol, and other prevention efforts, especially during these continued COVID pandemic times. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Grover Beach hereby supports October 23rd through the 31st, 2021 as Red Ribbon Week and encourages all citizens to participate in tobacco, alcohol, and other drug preventative activities, making a visible commitment to healthy communities in which to raise a generation of drug-free youth. Be it further resolved that the City of Grover Beach City Council encourages all community members to follow the Red Ribbon Pledge, no use of illegal drugs and no illegal use of legal drugs.
Very good. Thank you, Councilmember Rushing, for reading that. And I'll turn to Commander Millard to accept the proclamation and see if he has any comments he'd like to share.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Good evening. And I really want to thank the Council and the City of Grover Beach for their recognition of Red Ribbon Week. I know that Chief Lieberman can attest to, along with our department personnel, how much of an impact drug abuse has on our community. Unfortunately, just today, we responded to an overdose in our own city. Thankfully, this was a successful intervention and the person survived, but many of those overdoses result in the loss of community members, and we have lost residents to drug overdoses, something that we take personally. And so this recognition of promoting the drug-free lifestyle and a healthy lifestyle, I believe, shows the power of community. We are proud to be working with school officials on putting together some school assemblies for Red Ribbon Week at our local elementary school, with the hope that we will take that message to our youth, which I believe is so important. So I really want to reiterate and thank you and all of you for your support of Red Ribbon Week and the ongoing small community. This is really where it begins, is that grassroots effort from everyone on up to show what we are about and what we can do. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Commander, for those comments. Let me see if there's any members of the council that have questions or comments that they'd like to make on Red Ribbon Week. And I see Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. I just want to thank you for taking the time to do this and to educate our youth. As a grandmother of two young elementary school children, I know how important it is that they get this kind of education. It is so tragic what drugs do to a family, and the losers, unfortunately, include the children. So thank you so very much. I remember this has been going on for so long, when my children were at Grover Heights, and my grandchildren are there now, when the Red Ribbon Week was going on. So I just thank you so much for that. And I want to thank my colleague, Daniel Rushing, for reading that Red Ribbon Week proclamation. Seemed like I got those so often, I could never get through it without, you know, screwing up the Red Ribbon Week thing. But anyway, thank you so very much. I really do appreciate all your time and effort towards this particular effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you for those comments as well. And Councilmember Rushing, looks like you are unmuted and want to have a question or comments.
I do. First off, Councilmember Bright, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, thank you for that. It is incredibly hard to say that. I had no idea. Apparently somebody's coming on my door. My apologies for the dog. But my daughter is a Grover Heights student and has thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed all of the Red Ribbon Weeks, and comes home and has so many amazing things to share. And, you know, it really does set an amazing foundation for our kids. And I really, really appreciate the time that you all are able to put into it and really instill the necessity for this. So thank you very much. I do appreciate you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. I'll to next turn to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mary Lee. I will echo my colleagues in their thanks and comments, and will add that I think early intervention and education makes a big difference in the long run, and hopefully our kids will make better choices or good choices as they get older. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. So I'll turn to Councilmember Robert.
Yes, I agree with Councilmember Anna when Miller, excuse me, that when my kids were going to school, they had a program. It was Say No to Drugs, and they had a dog and a mascot, and it really helped. It made a huge difference. So, as Councilmember Miller was saying, the early intervention for our children make a huge difference in the whole community. Thank you for all you do in that area and everything you do to keep our community safe. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Very good. And I'll just echo my comments of my colleagues as well, and say thank you to the commander and then the entire police force for the Red Ribbon Week activities and then kind of making sure that those thoughts and processes kind of continue throughout the course of the year as even though we focus on them during this week, it's good to remember that it is something to kind of participate in throughout the entire year to make sure that it becomes a lifestyle that we do need to highlight throughout the course of the year. But we will take a moment, obviously, during Red Ribbon Week and appreciate the work of all of our police officers. So, Commander Millard, thank you for that.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. I really appreciate all of your comments, and I will pass along your support to our department.
Very good. Definitely appreciate that. So, with that, I will go ahead and close our ceremonial calendar and bring it back and see that we have no presentations this evening. So, that will take us to our public communications, where at this time the Council will allow public comments with additional communication if necessary, allowed at the after the regular business items. Any member of the public may address the Council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this Council. The Council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the Council cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. So I will look to our clerk to see if there's anyone on the comment on the line for public communications. And if someone does want to call in, that number is 805-321-6639. And I'll turn to our city clerk to see if there's anyone on the line.
No, we have no one on the line.
Thank you very much. I will go ahead and close public comments and bring it back to the Council for our consent agenda, where we have a number of routine items that are listed for consideration as a group. So the recommendations are noted in parentheses. We do have roll call votes this evening. Let's see if there's any members of the Council that have any questions on an item that is on the consent agenda. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you do. Seeing no one unmute themselves, I'll turn to our city clerk and see if anyone has called about an item under the consent agenda. If so, please call in at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn to our city clerk to see if anyone is on the line for the consent agenda.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public comment on the consent agenda, bring it back to the Council for a potential motion.
Well, I'll make a motion then that we accept the consent agenda as presented.
I will second.
Looks like we have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bright, and I'll go with a second by Councilmember Rushing by the skin of his teeth. And I'll turn to our city clerk for a roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Rushing.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Councilmember Roberts.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So we have an approved consent agenda this evening. Thank you very much for that. And thank you to staff for putting those items together and moving forward with very necessary items in a non-contentious fashion. But that will close our consent agenda. We have no public hearings this evening. And so that'll take us to our regular business items, where if there is anyone who wants to call in under our business items tonight, please call in at 805-321-6639. And our first item tonight is our fiscal year 2022-2026 capital improvement program update. And I will turn it over to our capital improvements project manager, Ms. Erin Wiggin, for our update and our staff report.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council.
Good evening.
Get the presentation up here. Can you all see that?
Yes.
Okay. So I will jump right into our capital improvement program project update. I'll start calling it the CIP from now on because that is a mouthful. I'll walk you through a little bit here. So the CIP outlines the schedule of expenditures for projects that cost more than $50,000. So our document identifies projects and funding sources and schedules over the 5-year period. And it also identifies the unfunded project needs as well. The intent is to advance the council goals and priorities. And this year, there's a major city goal of street improvements and building and facilities improvements. This current fiscal year includes 21 projects with a budget of nearly $13 million. So I will go through each category and highlight. I won't go through specific details. I'll just highlight each category. For our parks category, we have three projects. We have the decomposed granite path at Mentone Basin Park, which is being constructed as part of our Measure K street project. That will be completed at the end of this month. We have the design documents for the Ramona Garden Park master plan. We will be pursuing design documents, and staff will bring a recommendation for award to a consultant next month. So that will be the first phase of several phases of the Ramona Garden, of implementing the Ramona Garden Park master plan. And as a reminder, the project will add a playground, an amphitheater, and other amenities to the park. The last project we have in the CIP, the current scope is for the skate park to include concrete, lighting, demolition of the kiosk, and demolition of the restroom. But given the challenges with recurring vandalism, staff revisited the scope, and after meeting internally, we've recommended to just remove the kiosk and the restrooms, or demolish them, remove the benches and tables, and add lighting and provide a portable restroom enclosure. You can see in this picture here, the bottom right of your screen is a portion of our vandalism here that we have temporarily boarded up. Staff sought input from the Parks and Recreation and Beautification Commission last month, and the discussion actually included the possibility of building a new skate park at a more suitable location. So we reviewed the rationale for, you know, modifying the scope to address the immediate concerns, and the PRBC agreed with this modified scope and also with the long-term goal of building a new skate park in a more suitable location, potentially maybe near 16th Street Park. Moving on to public buildings and facilities, we have three projects here. We have exterior improvements at the police station for helping to protect vehicles. We have exterior improvements to City Hall, Fire Department, and the Police Department. And then we also have the courtyard improvements. Staff recently completed a needs assessment, and we will be seeking design proposals for design for a new courtyard. The largest funded category is our streets and storm drains. As you've seen throughout town, we have a lot of work going on. We have our Measure K project underway over at Trouville, Seabright, and Manhattan. We will be bringing to you next month a recommendation for award of a contract for the next Measure K project. Then we will be starting our first major street project at South Oak Park. This is West Grand to Mentone. That will be starting next month as well. And then we have a sidewalk repair project that's scheduled or slated for spring next year. And then a sidewalk infill project, which is a portion that is coordinated with the Measure K project. But we also have a portion of funding, about $200,000, that was in the CIP is intended to fund a design to pursue an over-the-counter community development block grant in February 22. You just provided direction last month to begin this design effort. So we've started pursuing design proposals, and then we just learned that CDBG will not be funding new projects in 2022. So staff is now recommending to modify the project and just do a much smaller construction project, design and construction infill project in one of the priority one areas that was set last month. So here are a couple options that we could consider for this sidewalk infill project. Again, priority one streets are major streets or proximity to schools within two blocks of schools or parks or points of interest throughout the city. So one thought here was to infill South 4th between Trouville and Mentone, and that would provide a continuous walkway all the way from Mentone to Grand on South 4th. Another suggestion is to also look at South 10th between Rockaway and Long Branch, which is near Grover Beach Elementary, and also look at North 9th from Atlantic City to Saratoga. It's our estimate this could all be done with that $200,000 for design and construction, but we could also consider other options. Moving on to the water category, you've probably or likely have seen our current CDBG project, which is the upgrade of 2-inch and 4-inch mains all throughout town. This is estimated to be complete at the end of November. We have another water main project going out to bid next month. We have some water main valve replacements that we are doing in conjunction with other projects. And we have a water meter replacement program. And then, of course, we have the Central Coast Blue project. And lastly, we have our wastewater. For this fiscal year, we will be doing the second phase of our sewer line work that supports future development at El Camino Real. This is a picture here from our first phase, which was our Highland Sewer Project. And then we also have the sewer project to support existing flows. And staff is actually looking at pursuing a design to combine these two projects just for efficiency, and will likely bring a recommendation for design award next month. Then we also have the Front Street Lift Station and the Nacimiento Lift Station upgrades on track for this fiscal year. Looking at long-term capital needs, the current CIP identifies about $60 million worth of unfunded needs. Some of the projects in the unfunded needs section include the Corporation Yard construction, a new City Hall Civic Center, the remaining of the Ramona Garden Park improvements, major street rehabilitation work, and now it could also include potentially a new skate park. So staff is recommending to develop a long-term capital needs assessment to just better forecast and identify and prioritize those unfunded needs and those projects. And this is really necessary for our facilities, just given the age and the space constraints that we have, and then also our ongoing maintenance needs and costs. This would be completed internally and brought to council with the draft CIP early next year. Just looking at the CIP update and staff impacts, as you can see with the extensive amount of work we have, it's a lot in the Public Works Department, and staff is reviewing impacts of this workload on Public Works operations and maintenance staff, but also engineering staff. We're also looking at solutions, including hiring a consultant to mark city utilities, or even looking at hiring a consultant for project managers for selected projects. To review here, we're looking at we're seeking council direction regarding the scope, or the modified scope, I should say, for the skate park, and then also for the sidewalk infill project. We're also seeking your direction to proceed with a long-term capital needs assessment. There's not really any a fiscal impact since the CIP funding is included in the capital budget, but there would be a bit of a reduction if we do reduce the scope of work at the skate park. And then I just have questions.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation, Ms. Wiggin. Nicely done. So let me turn to council members. And as we're bringing back council members back to the screen, I will invite members of the public to call in at 805-321-6639. So let's see if there's any members of the council. Go ahead and either raise your hand or unmute yourself. And it looks like our Mayor Pro Tem has unmuted herself. So four questions of Ms. Wiggin.
Thank you. Regarding the sidewalk infill and those three alternatives that you gave us, 4th Street, South 4th Street, are there homes along that that stretch where you that you referenced?
Yes, so there are, and one thing I should have mentioned, these are selections that we thought of in order to maximize that $200,000 and also complete some priority ones, you know, complete a major street or complete something with the school. But staff would have to go work with the designer to look at right-of-way issues or other hindrances that might be there. You are right. There's a fence line close to that, so we would have to look at right-of-way and things like that to proceed there. And it might be cross-prohibitive once we evaluate the design.
Okay. So along those lines as well, is there any possibility that there might be any other kind of funds that might come to us for South 4th Street, you think? Because it's
I would ask Director Ray if he would have any insight for any other funding for South 4th, a major street. I'm just not aware.
Okay. Thank you. The others are both residential streets, right? Yes.
Right.
Those are really my only questions. Good report, though. Thank you very much. It was very concise, and thank you. We appreciate that.
And we do have Mr. Ray with us, so perhaps he can respond to your question with regards to 4th Street.
I would happily do that. So no federal or state grant funds anticipated. The CDBG was the primary source. We could look back at the ARPA funding as well as our gas tax funding. However, that is all currently allocated to other work. So I don't anticipate seeing a new source of funding for that section. Long answer, no.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mayor.
Certainly, very good. Thank you for those responses. And next I'll turn to Councilmember Robert for questions.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm sorry, Ms. Wiggins, you probably said this and I missed it. Are we to choose one of those choices of the three, 4th, 10th, or 9th, or are we budgeted for all three of those?
Sorry, I have a printer in the background here, so hopefully you can hear me clearly. But the what was presented would be all for one project. So okay. I'm not looking for selection of just one of those. The intent is that hopefully we could do all three or at least two out of the three.
Okay, so are you looking for direction from us to pick which two out of three, or?
The direction really is to allocate those funds, because originally the funds were allocated to pursue the grant. So the direction really is to get your input to reallocate those funds for a design and construction project for a smaller project. Unfortunately, it would have been great to get that grant and do a large sidewalk project, but it just didn't happen.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that. Mr. Ray, I see your hand raised. Was that to respond to a previous question, or Mr. Robert, or Councilmember Robert?
Just to help clarify a little bit. So staff anticipates that the three projects could be done within the available funding. They're consistent with the priority one sidewalk infill policy direction provided by council at our last council meeting. However, council could, if so choose, provide direction staff to look at other sidewalk sections within the priority one areas identified previously. This is just our top recommendation, but certainly if council wanted to provide direction to look at other areas or to replace one area in particular, say South 4th, for example, with another more residential area, staff could look at that, and again, consistent with the policies previously provided, could select another area.
I see. Thank you, Mr. Ray.
Very good. Let me see by either raising of hands or unmuting if Councilmember Rushing or Councilmember Miller has any questions. Very good. I will ask one question of Mr. Ray or Ms. Wiggin. So realizing the three that you've chosen are priority ones, I know we'd had some conversation during the ribbon cutting of 16th Street Park and the playground equipment over there. I believe it's the intersection of 16th, and I believe that's Mentone right there. If that was a consideration, or if that sidewalk and curb ramp was being considered under another program.
So you're referring to the, I guess that would be the southeast, or excuse me,
I believe that would be the northeast
corner, adding a curb ramp over there. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just trying to clarify what the reference was for.
Yes, I think there's
a partial. That was identified. Yeah, that's identified in the overall sidewalk assessment with the priority one streets. We could certainly consider that for this smaller project.
Okay, very good. So it's but the three that you've chosen are in staff's consideration higher priorities from a available funding standpoint, and probably a higher number of users potentially.
Exactly, just given the major street for the one and then the proximity to the schools for the other two locations.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. So one other question not related to sidewalks. It has to do with the kind of the needs assessment. Is there, I know from a parks facilities and water, wastewater standpoint, there's the capital needs there, but would we be including our community buildings such as Trueville and the courtyard into those assessments? I know we've recently done improvements at the fire station, the roof at City Hall. So are the component systems in our existing buildings included in that needs assessment, such as mechanical, plumbing, or electrical, or a roof?
Yes, so the needs assessment would be all city facilities and equipment and everything in every city-owned facility.
Great, okay, definitely appreciate that. So, and then I think that answers all of my questions by an unmuting of mics. Go, let's see if there's any other questions that got generated by council. Seeing nobody unmute themselves, I will go ahead and turn to our city clerk, see if we have anyone on the line for public comment. And as she answers, I'll invite people to call in at 805-321-6639.
Yes, we have Brenda Auer.
Very good. Thank you. Good evening, Ms. Auer.
Yes. Hello, this is Brenda.
Good evening.
Hello.
Yep, we can hear you, and go ahead and make your, yep, thanks, go ahead.
Great, just briefly, I'd like to let you know that the streets are beautiful, and 16th Street Park is just amazing. Everyone I know is really thrilled with it, and we've done a real good job with that. It's a good addition. My concerns today are the long-term capital needs and staff workload. I don't know, it's on page 3. And it was talked about with the City Hall and the Civic Center. Grover Beach really hasn't grown much, really doesn't have much more room to expand. You know, we're not the millions of people that are in Fresno. We're just a small community. I would ask that the council would consider, instead of using those funds to make the City Hall larger or improve it, to maybe kick back some of that into our roads. Stuff that the, you know, Measure K doesn't cover, like the sidewalks you were talking about, or maybe even help us to pay off that Measure K bond prior to the time it's due. We've all gotten our tax bills recently, and my Measure K bond tax is substantially higher than it was supposed to be. I know the roads are getting done quicker, but it's still a burden on the homeowners, and I don't think we should be building new facilities without taking into consideration what you've asked the homeowners to pay for, that the city maybe has extra monies now with the valuable marijuana permit. I don't know where this fits in, but I understand one of the marijuana businesses in Grover Beach is selling for $56 million. I'm curious if we'll make tax money off that. If we wrote anything that protects us from those permits being resold without being verified who the people are. I mean, I heard, I don't know, but Jay-Z, I don't know that you can compete with somebody like Jay-Z. But the fact is that we can't correct mistakes we've made but it looks like these permits are now gold. And maybe there's something that we could do to make sure we capitalize off that. The marijuana money, unfortunately, we've chosen to go that direction. It's huge. And it's brought us out of having to be in bankruptcy as we were, you know, many years ago, facing it. And we don't have that now. We're flush with money. So if we could just kind of maybe keep our focus on the actual property owners here and the burdens they've taken on with this Measure K, that's really all I want to say. I know your job is tough, and I'm glad that, you know, we've got a council that is resonance. I think it's real important because you feel my pain as you look at your tax bill as well, I know. Anyway, have a good evening. Thank you for letting me talk to you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments, Ms. Auer. And we appreciate all that you said to us tonight. So let me turn back to our city clerk and see if anyone else has joined us on the line for public comment on this item.
No, we have no one else on the line.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public comment on this item, bring it back to the council for kind of deliberation and some direction. But first, I'll turn to the city manager with respect to if there's anything that he wanted to respond to from our public commenter that pertains to the item before us tonight.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor Lee and council members. Good evening to you. Just a few points in response. First, just to emphasize that what we're recommending to be developed is a long-term capital needs assessment. It is not a financial plan. It is not a budget. It's not money that we're putting forth immediately towards these items. But it's really about a long-term plan over the next 10 years to identify what our facility and infrastructure needs are. With regards to City Hall, our building is roughly 50 years old. Some parts of it are older than that. And we are constantly battling maintenance issues. We're dealing with building components that are old, and getting parts for them is difficult. And we're also dealing with a building that was made for a city organization 50 years ago. And while our population as a whole has not greatly risen over the last several years, we are a larger city than we were 50 years ago. And our needs have changed, and our services have changed. And so we'd like to do some initial legwork to help identify what some future needs are, knowing that we have a lot of conversations and milestones to get to even contemplate funding those future needs. But we think it's important and prudent for us to take that step as we look ahead to the future, much like we are contemplating for additional ball fields, softball fields, baseball fields, pickleball courts. This is an opportunity for us to look broadly at what our future needs are from a city infrastructure standpoint and bring that back to the council next spring for further deliberation and dialogue. So again, there's no money being associated with this. It's internal staff work that we think is important to identify future needs here in our community as we continue to change and evolve as a community. I'll also mention that we are coming back to the council in November of this year, next month, with a resolution on issuance of the next street bond in response to council's direction to continue our pace of Measure K improvements. We are on track for completing all local streets under Measure K14 in the next 10 years. We'll have more information about the tax rates and impact on tax rates at that time, but I'll just mention that each year our tax rates are less than what was projected initially when Measure K14 was approved back in 2014. Because our assessed valuation has increased beyond what was projected, we're getting more bang for the buck at a lower cost than what was projected now 7 years ago. So that's important to acknowledge, and we'll have more information on that coming up next month. And then lastly, I won't speak a great deal to some of the comments regarding cannabis businesses, but one clarification, there was a comment made about a business that has recently sold. That was in San Luis Obispo. There's a business based in Santa Barbara that has a component in San Luis Obispo. That's not one of our businesses in Grover Beach, so that's not something that is part of our community today. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate the responses, and I'll bring it back to the council for discussion on the three topics that staff is looking for some direction on this evening. So, Excuse me. So I think let's start with the sidewalks. That seemed to be where we generated most of our questions of staff. So let's see if there's any consensus towards where whether we want to proceed with a modification of what we provided direction for staff last time in light of the fact that the CDBG funding is not going to be available. So I'm assuming by a show of a positive thumbs up, if people are okay with moving off of that approach since the funding won't be available. Very good. So I think that was probably the easiest one we may have tonight. But let's take a quick, just a quick recap of staff has brought forth 4th Street. I think it was a portion of 9th Street and a portion of 10th Street. So is there a consensus to move forward with those three streets? And maybe any comments that someone might want to bring towards that. So I'll start with Council Member Robert.
Those sound like good locations, Mayor, but did I understand her say that Mrs. Wiggins say that they possibly could include, or Mr. Ray say they could include the 16th Street corner that you were speaking of, Mayor?
So maybe I'll see if I can put some words into Ms. Wiggins' mouth and just say there seemed to be some discussion about the viability from a right-of-way standpoint on 4th Street, and perhaps staff looks at that first, and if there is a need to pivot, maybe 16th Street is where we pivot to, or vice versa. Is that a fair statement, Ms. Wiggins?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So did that make sense, Mr. Robert, or Councilmember Robert?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, very good. Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, sir. No, I like the three proposed sites. I know we might not be able to do all of them, but I would definitely want to make sure that we are prioritizing the school zones in advance of that. I'm not going to pick north or south on this one, definitely want to make sure that if we only do two, that those are the first two that we go through.
Very good. So I'll turn to either Councilmember Miller or Councilmember Wright. Any comments that you want to add? I'll go to Mayor Pro Tem Wright first.
Thank you. I agree with Councilmember Rushing regarding the streets that are closest to our elementary schools. They need to be the most walkable, I believe. But I also do appreciate staff including South 4th Street because it is a well-traveled road, and I do like the idea of it being the sidewalk being completed. So I do like those choices, and I will support those choices. So thank you.
Very good. Now I'll turn to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. I'll just echo what's already been said. I am supportive of the recommendations.
Very good. So a thought did occur to me just to kind of perhaps flush out the potential four locations, the three that staff brought forward, and then the northeast corner of 16th Street. So I'm wondering if we can design all four locations. And then depending upon the budget available for construction, craft the bid advertisement in such a way that we can choose which ones that are most viable for the funding that we have available. Is that a worthwhile endeavor, or should we just pick the ones that we want to and move forward with?
So yeah, I think we could design all four. It would obviously reduce what we have left for construction by a little bit by adding that design portion, but not by a significant amount.
Okay, very good. I think my thought for the northeast corner of 16th is right by the park, both Mentone and 16th Street Park, and does complete sidewalks in both directions. So is there a consensus on that, or what's the council's preference on that? So it looks like we have overall consensus. Councilmember Miller, was there something you wanted to add? to that? Oh, you're good too? Okay, gotcha. Okay, very good. So any other direction that council, excuse me, that staff needs on sidewalks tonight? I'll take a no microphone unmuting as yes, that you got have what you need. So let's turn to the CIP needs assessment next. So I'll just start by providing a comment that I have always been in favor of coming up with whether it's an expanded five-year CIP or a needs assessment that will provide a roadmap for where we as a community and we as an organization can then determine where to put funds appropriately. So I definitely appreciate Ms. Auer's comments, and we've got a limited or a finite amount of locations where we can put funding. And if we identify those locations, we as a community and we as a council can determine where to best utilize those funds. And so I'm in support of a CIP needs assessment from that perspective. Let's see, by an unmuting of microphones, if anyone wants to provide any additional comments. Seeing nobody unmute themselves, Mayor Pro Tem Brent.
Well, I just, thank you, Mayor. I just want to agree with you on that point. And I think it is always very valuable to know what you need and what it's going to take to get there. May not mean that you're going to get everything that you want and everything that you need, but it is important to know what it's going to take to get where you want to go. So I think I think a needs assessment is very valuable. So I appreciate staff bringing that forward. Thank you.
Very good. Let's see if there's anyone else that unmutes themselves for comment. If not, we'll consider that consensus to move forward with the needs assessment. Very good. Looks like we've got consensus there. So I think the only item we haven't talked about in this area tonight is the skate park. And Ms. Wiggin brought forward something for us to kind of consider as a modified CIP. Having talked with the city manager and kind of heard some of the reasons that were expressed this evening, let's see what kind of thoughts we have on taking our 20-something year old skate park and modifying a capital needs program there, and potentially even considering relocating it to another location. So let's see if there's folks that want to comment on that. Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. I'm agreement with staff recommendation. A reduced scope of work makes sense, especially given the long-term goal of moving that skate park to another location, a more suitable location.
Very good. I think I saw Councilmember Robert had his hand raised.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm on the fence about this, because that skate park, although 20 years old, is important to the community, I believe, and I know we're not shutting it down. We're talking about tearing it down and opening it up, just as a freebie for everyone, which has its problems itself. But the buildings there that you're speaking of demoing, may I ask Ms. Wiggin, do you have a approximate cost on the demolition for those buildings?
I don't have that information right now, but I can get that.
Okay. They are, I know, 20 years old, but those buildings are substantial. They're all brick, and they're in very good shape. I know they're the item of vandalism right now that costs the city some money. But I spoke with Kevin Campion, and he's going to speak with, and I think he already has, with the city manager and Kathy Pecker of the Parks Department in regards to maybe trying to get this, and he owns a 501 board shop, and he also runs skate parks. And although he's going to retire, he wasn't willing to come in and do it himself. He has some ideas to help it, like we did with the YMCA. I volunteered with the YMCA years ago, and they came in. They had some issues with staffing it, so it didn't last for very long. But if we can get a private entity in there to supervise this and run it as a business, and we just, the city, supply the property, it could be profitable to the community and the individual running it. And because the problem with having it unsupervised is you're just going to get all the bullies there, and it's just going to become a real problem with it within the community, I believe. To shut it down completely is not something we're talking about, but I'm up in the air about tearing down the buildings and just opening the place up. So I know we're just at the beginning of these stages, but that's my opinion. I don't think we should just do that quickly. I think we should explore some other avenues, and that's what I believe. Thank you.
Definitely appreciate those comments. So I know there was a couple of operational characteristics in there. So I'll turn to our city manager and see if Ms. Petker is on the line and might be able to speak to how the operations of the skate park are currently being addressed.
Yeah, maybe just to kind of set it up, this is a dual track item where Ms. Wiggin is responsible for the overall maintenance and future needs, and then Ms. Petker is responsible for the operations and how the skate park actually functions today. And she's actually been tracking it pretty closely. I'd like to give her a chance to speak more to how it's come forward and the feasibility of staffing such a facility at this time.
Thank you, Matt. Good evening, Mayor and City Council. So we've gone through many iterations of staffing the skate park over the years, and we originally had YMCA come in and staff it. The city contracted services with them, and we paid for limited hours, but staffing, and our staffing also included enforcing the law. So any skater that came was required to wear a helmet, elbow and knee pads. Parents had to sign the waivers, and then eventually we were charging between $3 and $5 a visit. And it was very organized, very professional, and it didn't have any of the vandalism issues that we had. And then over the years, we trended to no staffing, and the YMCA stepped out of the staffing situation. So we just opened it, and by law, you can open the gate and you can post all the rules, and it's a use at your own risk system. So that's what we've been experiencing in the last few years. And unfortunately, that allows a lot of people to, a lot of the younger teenagers are the ones who are treating it differently and not following the rules and not wearing the gear, not wearing the helmet. So all of those things can happen. So right now, we basically have stepped away. It's not serving its purpose of all youth. There's a lot of bullying happening. So we, and trends have changed. So we do need to do something different. We either need to step up and invest in full staffing again, and or contract with a nonprofit to take the lead on that. So it's getting a bad reputation. Our city's getting a bad reputation. So we really need to put our best foot forward and make changes. In the interim, until we can build another new one that will have more modern features, and that we can have it in a more neighborhood environment where there are more people looking at it and using it, and more families, in addition to the existing playground structures and restrooms that are there, and not as isolated off the main drag.
And just to add to that, thank you, Ms. Petker. The capital project that was brought to you back in last spring for review, and then ultimately adopted by the council and now recommended for modification, did always include removal of the buildings, because it really is creating more effort than we believe it's worth, and the likelihood of us staffing it or finding an outside partner to staff it, we believe is pretty low compared to what we're investing in, trying to keep the buildings that were built many years ago in shape. And that's where the long-term facility really comes in. We'd recommend that if we look at a long-term facility, we locate it at a park where it is open. It's free for other people to use, just like any other park asset, a ball field, playground. It is an open facility that is an amenity for the community with lots of eyes and people watching and co-located with other uses, not where the current facility is, where it was deeded to the city 30 plus years ago. And we located the skate park because we had nowhere else to locate it at that time. So again, just to reiterate, we're not proposing to close it at this time. We are proposing to continue the open use that it's been working under for the last 2 years to clean up the space, clear up the space, to have it be more of an open space, but then also pivot towards looking at a long-term opportunity, preferably at a park facility like 16th Street Park or other facilities, and have that be a modern, futuristic skate park that meets the community's needs better than the one we have today.
Thank you, Mr. Bronson. Thank you, Ms. Petker, for that that explanation. Let me turn back to Councilmember Robert and see if that generated any other questions, or comments, or concerns.
Well, my concern is that if we just open it up to the general public, you're still going to have the bullying going on. And even with lots of eyes on it, as we experienced in 16th Street Park, it's the bigger kids are bullying the little kids over there. They're beautiful facilities that we invested all the money in, and the kids are just, big kids are just bullying the little kids, and because there's no supervision. I think a skate park without supervision is going to be trouble. It's going to be kids and gangs and smoking and alcohol and everything without supervision. I know Ms. Petker says that we've gone down the avenue of trying to find someone, a nonprofit or even a private individual. But have we searched hard enough? Can we find someone that could supervise that place? And ideally, that would be my preference, is that it would be a supervised structure building, and the buildings not be tore down, because they're, and to Mr. Bronson's concerns, is when you speak of vandalism, I'm thinking these are solid brick buildings, and so are they graffitiing on them and causing the city to take the graffiti off or board? I don't know what that board is on there. I know that's the it's damaged or just graffiti there they boarded up. But I'm just on the fence on this. And you've spent a lot of time dealing with it. I'd like to spend a little more time consulting with Kevin and see what his ideas are. Maybe can help us direct us into making this a facility that is supervised instead of just open to the public. And I think once we do close it down, if we close it down at all, then to open another one and build another one, millions of dollars, I just don't see that happening. It'd probably be structures that are above ground. We won't have the bowls and the concrete. It'll just be like we did in Morro Bay. So anyway, I just hate to lose the facilities.
Gotcha. Okay, definitely appreciate those comments. So let me turn to the city attorney just to make sure. So what's before us tonight has to do with the kind of the modification of the CIP. I think where Councilmember Robert is going is perhaps a further discussion at Parks and Rec for kind of a disposition of the operations and the maintenance of that. So I don't think I think we can provide direction to staff, but I don't think it's a matter of where we can go from a operations of the skate park tonight. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, I believe so. I think you need to stay fairly close to what's posted on the agenda. And certainly you can give direction, as you indicated, to staff to bring back any other topic that you'd like to discuss more thoroughly and in more detail. But I would stay a little closer to the agenda tonight.
Okay. Very good. So let me turn over to Mayor Pro Tem Bright, see if she has comments that she'd like to share.
Thank you. Yes, I certainly understand Councilmember Robert, his concerns. I know how tough it was to get that park built in the first place. And to have another one built, even though people like this one now, I think they do anyway. there is going to be that neighborhood concern. So it's going to be, you know, no one's going to want it in their backyard, like they didn't, want this one in their backyard. However, having said that, I truly believe that there is a higher and better use for the property that this skate park sits on now. But I know we don't want to get into that because I can see our attorney's face right now looking at me like, stop it. So I will. So I take my grandchildren there. I don't leave them there, however, because I have seen, I police it when I'm there. Those poor kids, when they see me coming, oh my goodness. Some of them just leave when they see me coming. So they know they can't smoke, they can't drink and whatever. And unfortunately, I think that is a problem. There isn't enough supervision. But I never drop my kids off and leave them. And I don't drop my grandchildren off and leave them either. So, but to get to the point here, I am in favor of modifying the scope at this point in time. And getting it into a shape where it is a facility that can be used and where it is safe for the children to go and do their riding their boards and their scooters and so on. But I really do believe that we could do something better later, possibly. But I do want to keep this open as long as we can, as long as it's safe for the children to be there. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate those comments. So it looks like Councilmember Rushing, I'll go to you first and then over to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Mayor. Grover Beach was a leader in this regard. We were the first skate park in this entire county. We were trying to figure out how the rules would be played, and we've tried the rules different ways here and there over the course of the years, from being staffed to being unstaffed. Think other communities in this county have figured out a better way of making this work down the road, and that typically is putting a skate park in a place that is actually visible by the community. A perfect example is Santa Rosa Park in San Luis Obispo, where there are dozens and dozens of people that are not involved with the skate park. They're involved in other activities, and they help self-police. I know that's not necessarily the scope here, so I'm just going to bring it back and say that I am definitely in favor of modifying the scope. I think that we need to, we certainly can keep the space open, but taking down the facilities and not putting massive amounts of additional funds into it is probably the best move at this point in time.
Thank you for those comments. Next, I'll turn over to Councilmember Miller for her comments.
Thank you. I certainly, like Mayor Pro Tem Bright, I certainly understand the concern voiced by Councilmember Robert. I have a 10-year-old, and I know well that kids can be mean and they bully each other. So similar to Mayor Pro Tem Bright, when I take my 10-year-old to the skate park, I don't leave him unsupervised. And I think that's something that's an onus we have to put on parents to supervise their children rather than the city to bring in a supervisor for the park. All that being said, I am supportive of the need to modify the project so that we can perhaps find a better location for that park in the future.
Okay, very good. Appreciate those comments. I think I am on the approach of modifying the project as well, with the potential to put the skate park future consideration into the needs assessment and making sure that there is a conversation at a larger level, whether it be Parks and Rec, whether it be full community involvement, whether it be the gentleman that Mr. Robert or Council Member Robert mentioned in his retirement, coming to say, okay, what should be done with this? And perhaps it is that it is best served right where it's at, under a different element of organizational structure. But I think in order to provide the best operational characteristics with the liability of the city and the users of the park in the best situation. I think modifying the scope to do just a portion of what was already in there is my thoughts as well. So let me turn back just to see if Councilmember Robert is okay with proceeding with a modified scope, with an understanding that the needs assessment will work on that just from a kind of a consensus standpoint. So Councilmember Robert.
Thank you, Mayor. So we're making a decision tonight, so that I understand, to tear down these buildings and open it up to the general public. Is that what we're doing, Mayor?
And perhaps a clarification, I'll turn to Mr. Bronson. It is already open to the general public without any restrictions except for, and I'm not sure if it's dusk to, or a dawn, excuse me, sunrise to sunset, or what our hours of operation are. So Mr. Bronson, if you could clarify, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Since I believe July 2019, the park has been open to the public from dawn to dusk, essentially. We unlock the gates in the morning and close them at night, and the public can access the park freely during daylight hours. And so that is what's been underway for the last two years. We would continue that, no change in operation. What would be changed, pending your concurrence this evening, is we would proceed with the modified scope in removal of the buildings and installation of a portable restroom enclosure so that we still have a restroom facility on the site. I think that's really important. But the main thing is that we would not be proceeding with a concrete improvement. So that's really the biggest cost driver that we're avoiding in this recommended scope. In our view, there's no reason to proceed with adding concrete if we're not going to be looking long-term at the facility as part of a future need. So that's really the biggest cost savings, quite frankly. But the rest of the scope would remain in place, removal of the buildings, adding some additional lighting, and installing a portable restroom enclosure so that we still have that facility in place. And we are looking for that concurrence this evening so that we can move forward with that modified scope this fiscal year.
Thank you, Mr. Bronson. So, you know, it's been difficult the last couple of years because of COVID, and I'm sure a lot of skate parks have felt that, as well as other recreational businesses. But my question is, are we not going to pursue, or do you not wish to pursue, trying to get an entity like the YMCA back in there again? Because when I was involved years ago, they ran a very successful program. Even though we were on limited hours, we had dozens of kids there, and the programs were great, and they had the contests, and it was really going somewhere. Unfortunately, they just didn't have the funding to continue on staffing it. And I'm certainly not recommending that the city staff it. That's certainly not where I'm going with this at all. I would like to see a private entity get in there and supervise the kids, because as Councilmember Miller says, you know, if your parents aren't there and you have no supervision, there's going to be bullying, and it's going to just rise to the top. And unfortunately, it's just going to continue to happen. So I guess my question is, I apologize for rambling on, but are we not going to pursue trying to get another entity in there? We're just going to open it up and tear down the buildings. Is that the plan? Thank you.
And let me try and respond to that for just a question before I turn it over to Mr. Bronson for any additional items. I think from what I heard from Ms. Petker is that we as a city have tried that. I didn't hear from her that we would not be open to hearing from other folks outside with an approach. So if you could connect that gentleman with Ms. Petker, that might be a very worthwhile conversation for them to have. In which case, then that could come forward through the Parks and Rec and Beautification Commission as a recommendation to the council to move forward with that alternative approach, if it was different or viable, depending upon that characteristic. But let me turn to Mr. Bronson to make sure that I haven't misspoken.
That's correct. And just for the record, Ms. Petker did speak to the individual today. And so they made a connection, and he's able to assist in consulting on future needs for future facilities, not so much operations, but really helping advise us on what future skate park facilities could look like. And so we would definitely continue that discussion. I'll just say that being involved in the YMCA, they just didn't have staffing The skate park was hardly ever open because they could never have staffing available to cover the hours. I don't think that is uncommon amongst other nonprofit providers. It's just not a feasible option, quite frankly, to have that degree of staffing supervision. What's more feasible is to have some assistance in programming, to be able to be out there for a few hours and do a scooter or skate activity. And that's really, I think, what's more likely in having adults there during certain classes or certain times, not in having overall supervision for a long period of time. So we will certainly continue to look at options, but we just don't think that having a long-term staffing is a viable solution right now.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bronson.
So realizing we've had quite a bit of discussion since we had public comments on this, and we didn't have any real questions on the skate park operations or the project, I do realize from our city clerk that we have a member of the public that has come back, and so I did want to give them an opportunity to speak for approximately a minute or so if we could, realizing that the skate park, we've had some discussion about that. So I'll turn back to our city clerk, reopen public comments, and invite our member of the public to come back in and provide comments on this on the skate park.
Yes, we have Brenda Auer.
Good evening again, Ms. Auer.
Hello again, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I feel like I'm the only one not watching The Voice tonight.
Or the Dodger Giant.
Call me old fashioned. But, you know, I've raised 5 kids, and I would have never let a 10-year-old stay at home alone or go to a skate park alone. I hear Robert's concern that the skate park has been valuable at times, but I really think it's a parent participation situation. So have we thought about reaching out to parents, having volunteer parents come? We're right on the border of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. Should we talk to Arroyo Grande about maybe even marrying in with us, using one of their parks, where there's more activities that are happening? Just an idea, just a thought. I don't want to be redundant, but I have to go back to the capital needs assessment. Every dollar we spend investigating, I know that we're not putting actual money into it, but staff time is money. My time is money. So anytime a staff member works on something like this, it's costing me. It's just the facts. And we spent so much money seeing what we could do to beautify our city, and with all these studies, tens of thousands of dollars with the convention center. That was all money that could have been put into the town in a different way. I think our studies and our assessments are a waste of money. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be redundant. But again, I'd like you to consider taking the burden off the taxpayers and before we start spending the extra money. And that's it. I'll go back to watching The Voice. I've said enough.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Thank you, Ms. L. I appreciate you.
Please consider the parent participation. It would be a great thing. All right. Take care.
Thank you very much, Ms. Auer. Good to hear from you again. So let me bring it back, and I'll anticipate turning it back over to Mr. Bronson for just a quick response to Ms. Auer's questions. But my anticipation, I'll come back to you in just a moment, Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Bright, is that in coordination with her counterpart in Arroyo Grande, I'm sure that the skate park has come up between Ms. Petker and Arroyo Grande, as well as Pismo Beach, about either joint classes or joint participation. But I'll turn to Mr. Bronson or Ms. Wiggin just to make sure that the proverbial no stone has been left unturned when it comes to use of the skate park currently.
Yes, we'll certainly look into that.
Okay. Very good. I appreciate that. Next, I'll come back to our Mayor Pro Tem for some comments.
Thank you. Actually, it's a question. Is the skate park, does it have security cameras?
And perhaps that is a question either for Mr. Bronson or Commander Millard, if he's still with us.
The skate park does not have security cameras.
And that's in large part because it does not have adequate power to the site to have security cameras as easily as we can other park facilities. Again, it's not a true park facility in the same way as our other sites. So we've had to improvise and provide some additional services there. But unfortunately, no, we don't have the same degree to have security cameras there currently as we have other facilities.
May I ask another question, or are we getting too far into the weeds here?
I was going to say, with the caveat that we've gotten a little bit further away from the kind of where the staff report is going this evening, so I'm going to turn to Commander Millard real briefly for, because I saw him come up on camera, so I'm not sure if he wanted to add anything with regards to responses and safety at the skate park.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Just echoing what City Manager Bronson said, he did assess the area for security cameras, but the lack of available power in the area makes that unfeasible at this time without a dramatically increased construction cost that would take to run the power to that facility to get the cameras. Our department is aware of the safety concerns, and we make it a priority during our patrol days to make sure that our staff are checking on the area and patrolling it as best as we can, but recognizing that our officers are unable to be there during the vast parts of the day.
Very good. Appreciate that input. So before Mayor Pro Tem, you ask your question, I'm going to turn over to Mr. Ray, so because he had his hand raised and I'm not sure what he wanted to add to the conversation.
I'll keep it brief since there's a lot going on here. Just maybe a little bit of a quick background to kind of understand staff's recommendations. You know, we looked at a couple of main issues here. There's vandalism, there's visibility, and there's providing a basic level of facility need. Smaller building, the bathroom building, is in fact a block structure, but the smaller building is not. Only a small portion, like a couple rows of blocks are. The rest is a wood structure. It's vandalized regularly. The bathroom, even a block structure such as it is vandalized regularly. And we tried to prohibit access to the site, and we figured out that we're basically unsuccessful. No amount of fencing repair. You know, we jokingly talked about razor ribbon, which is the wire they use in the military. You know, we don't want to go there, but you know, I mean, that we were getting to that point. It's like, how do we keep people out? They just damage the fence on a daily, if not weekly basis. So we wanted to provide the visibility, and we thought removal of the buildings would provide at least one of the building in particular, the little kiosk building, would provide that visibility. The second issue is provide bathrooms, not the bathrooms that can be vandalized easily, but provide bathrooms in a secure manner that are cleaned daily by a company. So we're providing these kind of an alcove for porta potties. We want to provide the lighting and the cameras as part of this project. So trying to meet all of the objectives of an interim project, you know, in the future, we can rethink this whole thing in terms of, you know, what could be done there. Do we want to move it? Do we really want to move it in the future? Or do we want to invest more heavily in this project? But I think for now, this is a stopgap measure to try to address the immediate issues that are occurring that we can't seem to have much impact on. And then, you know, a number of other things could be done. But this was staff's approach to, you know, put the finger in the dam and stop the issues. And we think it's a good approach. So that helps a little bit, you know, in kind of understanding what we're proposing, and that is just to try to eliminate all these issues to the extent possible while keeping an active skate park operable.
Gotcha. Thank you for that explanation, Mr. Ray. So, and I think you have a very appropriate image that I think we need to put our finger in the dam on this conversation, as we've kind of gone far afield of where I think the report gets us to tonight. So, but I think we can see from a council standpoint, and maybe we turn to Mr. Bronson and realize that as part of the needs assessment, a perhaps a larger discussion, definitely on the skate park and or parks and rec programs, maybe an appropriate conversation for an upcoming Parks and Rec and Beautification Commission, and definitely a city council meeting. So before we do one last question from Mayor Pro Tem Bright, I'll turn to Mr. Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, we would support that notion to proceed forward pending council deliberation in a moment regarding this particular project, but also to really build in a future skate park facility into this capital needs assessment. The recreation park programming is a valid topic as well, and we will work with the commission on that. I'll just note that right now, that is in the bottom tier of council priorities for address as resources permit. So we really haven't put a whole lot of time and effort into that because it really hasn't been prioritized like other areas. So that's something that I think we'll bring back to the council later this year as you approach your goals in 2022, just to know that recreation and park programming is one of the goals, and maybe could be prioritized further if the council wishes to consider that.
Very good. Definitely appreciate that clarification. So, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, in light of all this recent conversation, do you still have a question? Okay, very good. Didn't mean to scare you off, but so let's just one last kind of consensus kind of discussion. From what I'm hearing from staff is a request, and what I'm seeing from general consensus from the council is to proceed with a modified scope at the skate park, which would be to remove the buildings and as outlined in the staff report, and then a future discussion would be as either part of the needs assessment or as part of a parks and rec item, determine a either a programming use, a organizational use, or a potential relocation of the skate park. So is that a good direction to staff, either by a show of a thumbs up or a unmuting of yourself? Okay, I'll turn to Councilmember Roberts.
Yes, Mayor, did I hear Mr. Ray correctly that part of this destruction of the building would be to put in lighting and cameras also? Is that part of this project? Because you didn't mention that.
So perhaps for Mr. Ray, so was that part of the larger project that would yeah. no longer be part of the scope?
A part of this scope or future scope?
We're actually looking at that with a smaller project, and not significant lighting, but additional right. lighting, and to because of the removal of the building that provides yeah. electricity that was to the building, that means we would now have a power source for cameras and lighting.
Very good, thank you.
Okay, so it would be part of the smaller project. Okay, very good. So with that, it looks like do we have consensus? Okay, looks like we have consensus. Does staff need any other direction on this item before us tonight?
No, sir. And I'll just thank Ms. Wiggin for her stewardship of our capital improvement program. And once again, this is the largest program in the city's history. So I really want to thank Ms. Wiggin, Mr. Ray, the Public Works team, maintenance crew, all the work they're doing to deliver on these projects for our community. Thank you.
Very good. Well said. So I will close discussion on item number 7 and bring it back for item number 8, where we do have an opportunity to hear about Ms. Wiggin's other portion of what she does for the city, and say thank you to her ability to wear more than one hat when it comes to capital improvement programs, as we look forward to a discussion about West Grand Avenue street improvement updates. And before I turn it over to Ms. Wiggin for her presentation, I will invite folks to call in at 805-321-6639, and I'll turn it over to Ms. Wiggin for her presentation.
Thank you. Can you all see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So this is the West Grand Avenue street improvement update. So looking at the street improvements as a major city goal for fiscal years 21 to 23, and along with pedestrian and bicycle safety, back in 2019, Council awarded street rehab projects on three sections of our major streets, awarded design, I should say, for three sections of our major streets. So that's North 4th from West Grand Avenue to Ocean View, South Oak Park from West Grand to Mentone, and then West Grand Avenue from 11th to Oak Park. And as you know, you've just recently awarded the contract for construction for South Oak Park. So we will be, as I mentioned previously, we'll be starting construction on that portion next month here. The city also completed construction at the intersection of South Oak Park and West Grand to address traffic safety.
As you can see in the photo here, we did the pavement rehab just south of the intersection, and we did striping reconfiguration north and south of the intersection. The city installed no right turn on red signs to improve pedestrian safety, and then signal timing modifications and adjustments to accommodate the no turn on red prohibition and pedestrians access as well. So the CIP 2286 is for West Grand Avenue from 11th to Oak Park. It's about a $2.1 million full depth pavement rehabilitation project, which also includes the curb ramps for ADA compliance and then a bike lane striping as well. This is scheduled for fiscal year 24. And I do want to point out, though, that the city will be doing a maintenance project or a restriping of West Grand in its entirety from Highway 1 to South Oak Park, and that will be in November. Here's a portion of the design documents from the final design for West Grand Avenue from 11th to Oak Park. Really, the striping configuration is pretty much the same. This is a pavement rehab project, but we will have the green bike lane striped as part of this project, this future project. So as I mentioned, the design has been completed, but an issue has come up recently, and this could lead to a change to the final design. To access the corner, on the northwest corner, drivers heading northbound on Oak Park have to do a U-turn at Ramona, and only southbound drivers on Oak Park have direct access to Burger King over there. The current configuration in the design includes keeping these parkway planters, which I have a picture on the next slide, that are on West Grand at both sides of the street, and they are intended as a gateway to the city with the palm trees and the landscaping. So on the north side of the street, over here, the planters partially block or prohibit, I should say, Burger King from having a larger driveway. So this driveway on West Grand is an exit-only driveway. So there is no access to this business from West Grand Avenue because of the parkway planters. So staff is seeking direction tonight to consider modifying the parkway planters to provide access to the business from West Grand Avenue. So keeping in mind that it likely involves removing the parkway planters in its entirety, or at least significantly reducing the size of the planters. And then the property owner would need to reconfigure their driveway on their private property. If council does choose to pursue this change, then staff will work with the design consultant to modify the final design. And we'd recommend to do this work in fiscal year 24 as planned as part of the the large project. It could be done, the removal of these planters and modifying the driveway could be done separately, but costs always increase when you have economies of scale and things getting reduced. So doing it separately would probably not be as cost effective as doing it with the project. And initial estimates right now, just preliminary estimates for modifying the final design and then construction change these or remove these planters is about a $200,000 increase to the project. Looking at the timing of West Grand Avenue improvements, we also have a CIP 2287. It's a streetscape project from 4th to 8th Street. And the scope of this is a pavement rehab project, but also median enhancements and landscape medians like what are similar to 8th to 11th Street. And then also streetlights and street trees. And then curb ramps where necessary. And also we could look at, or council could consider ADA curb ramps and sidewalks that include the blue lithocrete, similar to like 2nd and 4th Street or other decorative treatment, but it could increase project cost. So this project is scheduled for next fiscal year, just given the significant redevelopment opportunities down in this area. So staff is just seeking clarification to confirm the current timing of these two projects. As I mentioned, 4th to 8th, the streetscape project is scheduled for next fiscal year. And then 11th to Oak Park, with which we have the final design, is scheduled for fiscal year 24. And just given the number, a significant number of projects in the CIP, staff might not be able to implement more than one major street project per year. And I also just want to quickly point out, too, that North 4th from West Grand to Ocean View is scheduled for fiscal year 23, and that project scope is a grind and overlay project. So if that project gets delayed any more, there could be some more significant pavement deterioration, and that could trigger more significant pavement rehab costs and significantly increase the cost of North 4th. So I just want to keep that in mind, too. And lastly, for considerations on West Grand Avenue, next summer, there's could be some potential significant increase in vehicle traffic because of the Pier Avenue closure at the Oceano Dunes. So impacts to your major streets could obviously include like additional traffic congestion, increased pavement wear, increased frequency of damage of streetlights and center medians and traffic signals and signs. So mitigation efforts just could include signal timing modifications and increased maintenance costs and an increased maintenance program. And the city will work with state parks to identify opportunities for state financial assistance. Again, to summarize here, we're seeking council direction for the final design for 11th to Oak Park, and if that needs to be modified. And again, confirming the schedule of the two West Grand Avenue projects, the streetscape project next fiscal year, and then West Grand from 11th to Oak Park in fiscal year 24. Quickly going through the fiscal impact here. So I do want to point out that both projects are obviously currently programmed in the CIP and funding is identified, but potential cost increases could be, like I mentioned, parkway modifications between 11th to Oak Park if we decide to modify those, enhanced concrete treatments between 4th to 8th Street, and even pavement repairs on North 4th Street if that project is delayed any further. And that is all I have for this one.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation, Ms. Wiggin. So as we come back to the council, I will invite members of the public to call in again at 805-321-6639. And before I turn to council for specific questions, I did want to turn to either the city manager or Commander Millard, because I think just a quick clarification. As Ms. Wiggin was discussing the movements at the intersection of West Grand Avenue and North Oak Park, if there's an opportunity to identify why the turning movements into the Burger King shopping center or the restaurant location are limited to right in, right out on North Oak Park traveling south. So I'll turn it over to Commander Millard just to for just a brief explanation of that, if you could please.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, prior to July of this past year, we did some research into traffic safety in the 100 block of North Oak Park near where the Burger King entrance driveway off of that southbound traffic. And we had experienced about 13 traffic collisions over a five-year period. It involved some cases vehicles turning across multiple lanes of traffic. If you're going up Oak Park, you make a left turn and you're crossing over all of those southbound lanes to try to get into the driveway access. It's not only an unsafe turn, but it's also illegal due to the traffic directions there. So in July, we installed traffic delineators across that driveway in order to prevent that illegal and unsafe turn because we didn't want anyone to get hurt from those traffic collisions that were occurring. Now, what is that doing is that the vehicles are going up to Ramona if they're driving northbound on Oak Park, and they're making a legal U-turn around those traffic delineators and then coming back down the road and then making a right turn into the Burger King driveway. Although this does move the vehicle up a half block in order to make that turn, they're only crossing one lane of traffic to turn around. It's a legal U-turn. It's safer. And we were able to observe some of the traffic movement just a couple months ago while we were at an intersection doing some other assessment work and saw several vehicles completing that turn without issue. So for the police department safety perspective, it's a much better option, and I believe the inconvenience to the drivers are minimal.
Very good. I appreciate that explanation. I see Mr. Bronson has his microphone unmuted as well. But part of the reason for my question is to kind of parlay this discussion into an understanding that we are talking about West Grand Avenue tonight and not north Oak Park. But I'll turn to Mr. Bronson.
That's correct, Mr. Mayor. And thank you, Commander Millard, for that information about the traffic safety work done on North Oak Park Boulevard. We would be looking to bring more information to council early 2022 on the set of improvements that was carried out at North Oak Park Boulevard, including the traffic delineators mentioned by Commander Millard. So that is a separate future agenda item. Tonight's item is really honing in on West Grand Avenue improvements and the potential for a design change at one section of West Grand Avenue, as this is the time to consider it if the council wishes to do so. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate that explanation from both Mr. Bronson and Commander Millard. So let's turn to the council, see if there's any specific questions by going either raising your hand or unmuting yourself. Looks like our Mayor Pro Tem is moving towards unmuting herself.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yes, it was an excellent report. Thank you very much. I just have one question, and that is, so we're talking regarding between 11th and Oak Park. We're talking about restriping it now and doing a pavement rehab in fiscal year 24 and 25. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. That answered my question. Thank you very much.
Very good. And not seeing anyone else unmute, maybe I'll ask a follow-up question to that. So is the timing for the construction of fiscal year 24-25 such that it's because we have other construction projects stacked up in front of it, even though we're doing the design for this project currently? Or is there a permitting stream that might delay construction until that time frame?
The timing for this project was phased based on all other CIP projects that are ongoing and also the available funding sources that we have. We do have a significant amount allocated in our general fund, much more than we used to, but it still doesn't allow for more than one major street project per year.
Definitely appreciate that clarification. So let's see, by unmuting of microphones, if any member of the council has other questions. Seeing no one unmute themselves, I'll go ahead and open up public comment on this item. So, and invite folks to call us at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn to our city clerk and see if anyone has joined us for public comment on this item.
We have Jocelyn Brennan.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Brennan. How are you tonight?
Hello. Great. Hello, Mayor and Council members. Thank you for hearing my comments. I don't have too many comments from 4th Street to 8th Street in Oak Park, that section, but I will say that we've been doing a lot of business attraction and development work on the west end from 4th to Highway 1. And as you know, the Pier Avenue entrance to the Oceano Dunes is expected to close really quickly here. July 1st of 2022 will be here before we know it. And so I would suggest that the city send a letter to the Coastal Commission and maybe our state representatives asking for more time to do a traffic study and plan ahead for that, because it will really impact Grand Avenue and it will impact the businesses and the flow of traffic. So nothing's been done to predict how that will, affect our residents and our tourism and our businesses. And so I think the time is now, since you're considering this tonight, to maybe see how that might be addressed. Because a decision was made that will affect your community, and there's been no funding or data provided. So we really don't know what we're facing. I mean, I think we can all guess that it's not going to be a good impact. And so, how can we prepare for that, or how can we mitigate that for our community? So I'm just mentioning that because I know it's a the time is of the essence for that topic. So those are my only comments, and I'm also available for any questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. So let me check in with our city clerk and see if there's any other members of the public on the line for comment on this item.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public comment on this item. And I do want to announce that we did receive some written communication, which has been placed upon the website. So and will be part of the overall record for this topic as well. So let me turn back to the city manager for just a moment. Ms. Brennan brought up a topic that I don't think is agendized for tonight. So I'm wondering if we potentially have that discussion as part of our council communications at the end of the meeting, or what your thoughts might be on that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Building on that question, I think the council could elect to provide direction to staff to bring an agenda item forward on drafting and sending such a letter to the Coastal Commission. Looking at the city attorney, you could provide that direction as part of this item, since we did introduce that topic as part of the agenda item this evening, or you could do so during council communications, but agree that the council could not take action on sending a letter or have much discussion on it tonight, but to bring that back to you at a later date.
Very good. So in anticipation of having a quick conversation about that with council, so if we were to provide that direction tonight, when could you bring back such a discussion topic?
I think staff could probably bring that back to you most likely at the next meeting, given what's currently planned for the next meeting. It would not be a lengthy agenda item, but it is a policy decision, because ultimately the Coastal Commission has determined a year, and for the council to send a letter recommending a different year would be a policy determination the council would need to make.
Okay, very good. Appreciate that. So let's have a quick, realizing we're kind of going sidebar here for a second, and perhaps limited thoughts of kind of a yes or no as to whether we want to agendize a topic of that. By unmuting of microphones, go ahead and provide any quick comments with regards to that request. I'll turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Can you please clarify what it is that we're requesting?
And perhaps I'll make an attempt and see if this resonates with the council. It basically, we would be asking, in my opinion, the Coastal Commission to and or state parks to provide direction to the city on what their plan is for West Grand Avenue and or the entrance to the state parks complex pending closure of Pier Avenue. I don't know if there's a request in my thought as to requesting an extension or whatnot, but I think a discussion of kind of accelerating plans or making sure that we are involved in those conversations would be where my thought process would be as to kind of a crafting a letter or at least a discussion topic.
And I think,
okay,
if I can build on that, Mayor Lee, I think that's a good summary. My suggestion to the council is, if you provide a direction to agendize that we keep the conversation limited to the Pier Avenue closure and the letter, and not make it open discussion around the entire Oceano Dunes closure, which would repeat the conversation the council had back in March of this year, which was a four-hour conversation. So I would just suggest that if you want to do this, to keep it limited to just that particular topic, and whether the council would want to send a letter on that topic.
Okay, so, but Ms. Brennan had also mentioned something about financial assistance, I believe.
And I think my thought process there would be more appropriate for us to have conversations with our legislatures with regards to potential next term legislation. And I think I don't know if it would be potentially overstepping our bounds as a city to preempt that conversation, but it also would need to be part of, in my opinion, a larger conversation at the state level. And perhaps, again, hearing differently from what Ms. Brennan was specifically asking for, but what we can do as a city and what the chamber can do as a chamber.
Okay, so I was just asking, so we're not going to include that kind of request. We're just asking for more information and being to be part of the process. And are we going to ask for a delay?
And I think that would be part of the discussion when it comes, okay, when it comes back for the letter.
Very good. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay.
Then I would support that.
Okay, very good. So any other members of the council? Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mary Lee. I too am supportive of a conversation around a letter. I think it's important for us to understand and recognize any new challenges that might come to businesses or residents because of this pending pier closure, Pier Avenue closure. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Rushing, Councilmember Robert. Looks like Councilmember Robert's in support. So Councilmember Rushing.
I will also definitely support a conversation about this. I look forward to seeing what we all come together with. There's definitely a lot of moving parts involved.
Very good. So it sounds like we have consensus to agendize that for a meeting at the discretion of the city manager based upon whether it's the next meeting or the following one, based upon availability of time and space. Okay, very good. Thank you everyone for that conversation. So let's come back to kind of the discussion in front of us this evening with regards to either prioritizing, perhaps is the wrong term, but whether we choose to move forward with modifications or 11th to Grand as designed, 11th take a pause in design and go 11th to Grand to make modifications to West Grand Avenue, or prioritize 4th to 8th first. And actually, before I do that, Councilmember Robert, did I miss a comment? Or, okay, cool, okay.
This is in regards to what you just spoke of.
Whenever perfect, okay, cool. Then I'll go ahead and turn to you for your comments on that.
This is a question for staff. Mr. Ray and Ms. Wiggin, I think you'd be the ones to answer this question. I think, Ms. Wiggin, you said we were planning on restriping and painting all the way from Highway 1 to Oak Park in November. Is that something that we can put on hold till we start the major projects of rehabilitation all these streets instead of painting now? Would what we have now suffice for two more years, or do we need to do all that painting? Thank you.
Perhaps I'd be the one to answer that. I'll note that my internet quality is pretty bad right now, so hopefully you can hear me. But staff's perception and that from what we're hearing from the community seems to be like that the striping needs to be addressed very soon. It is unfortunate, as you probably are aware, that, you know, putting striping on a road you're going to rehab means it's going to go away. We're looking at saving some money on that a little bit by not doing thermoplastic, which is much more expensive, except where needed. So we would do, you know, the typical paint striping, except in areas that are already in good shape, with anticipation of that be removed with the project. But I think it's in bad enough shape right now that it definitely needs to be done.
Okay, but you'd be doing the economy version, not the high-end version. Okay.
We always economize when possible. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Ray.
Very good. So any other questions on either the striping or prioritization? Okay. Not seeing anyone unmute themselves. Let me try and say, looks like we've got consensus to move forward with the striping as presented by staff and anticipated to move forward next month in November. So if any other concerns on that one, unmute yourself. Seeing no one, we'll consider that direction and consensus. So the next conversation becomes 4th to 8th Street has a fiscal year priority of 22-23. So let's make sure that the council is good with that prioritization, which would mean that we would start the design this fiscal year. Is that correct, Ms. Wiggin?
The design, we would intend to start the design late this fiscal year, correct?
Very good. Okay. So are we in agreement to proceed with that section of street as identified for construction in fiscal year 22-23? And Ms. Miller, Councilmember Miller, did I miss a thumb? Or did you have, okay, cool. Okay, so we are good to proceed with the 4th to 8th Street construction under the schedule presented by staff. So next let's go to just a quick conversation, confirmation that the 4th Street improvements would be programmed for the 23-24 cycle as discussed. So no changes there either, correct? Seeing a bunch of nodding heads, we'll take that as confirmation. Okay, so that takes us to 11th to Grand. And so realizing that would still be a 24-25 window for construction, let's have some conversation about modifying the design or keeping the design as identified. So I'll go ahead and start and see if anyone wants to join in. From a business standpoint, I think it is incumbent upon us as a city to make sure that there's access in and out of businesses. Oops. Hopefully I did not just freeze. Hopefully I didn't just freeze too much. So anyway, so I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure that businesses have access. And so realizing that southbound North Oak Park is going to be a right-in, right-out movement for several businesses in that area, I think a redesign of the West Grand Avenue portion of that would be a valuable lesson and a valuable approach to take a look at. So realizing that it could have a serious impact upon our entrance palm trees. I think the last time I looked, there's 8 palm trees on each side. Perhaps there's a way to reduce the number without removing all of the trees so that there is still an entrance feature, but still allowing a two-way left turn, two-way movements into that driveway entrance. So I think that's my kind of thought process on that. And I'll turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright to see if there's comments or confirmation of that.
Thank you. I do recall when those were installed, it was a big deal. There were, as I understand it, there were problems with safety equipment turning the corners there. I don't know if I don't imagine that Chief Lieberman is still with us, but I'm wondering if that is still an issue. And if so, that would really solidify my decision regarding this issue. I just remember it being a really big deal when those planters went in with people with big rigs and big trucks and so on.
And perhaps a tongue-in-cheek comment is that I hope the fire chief is still with us because he's going to present the next item. So let me see if let me see if he's within microphone range and can join us for a response.
Well, good evening. I am still here and listening intently.
Yeah.
The dreaded palm trees and planters from years of conversation. There was a lot of confusion. I recall early on when the planters went in, there was a lot of community concern about the planters, but from a statistical response perspective from Five Cities Fire, they're not a particular issue of concern to us as far as calls for service. I would be interested to see if Commander Ward had something from a police department perspective, but None from Five Cities Fire.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's good to know.
Well, it looks like Commander Millard is here, and we'll let him comment on that as well.
No, we do not have any issue from a police department perspective. If the fire trucks can make it around the corner, we certainly can. So.
Very good.
Okay, well, so that really was my big issue with those. I don't know what's happened, maybe just a change in command or change in perspective or what, but I do recall that was a problem at one time, or a perceived problem anyway. So that really was my only question regarding those planters. I would like to see if we could keep part of, I'd like to be able to save those palm trees, of course. Tree hugger. Thank you.
So from that perspective, would you be supportive of doing a two-way turning movements into that driveway if with a modification of West Grand Avenue?
Yes, it is very confusing. I mean, even for people who live here. So yes, I would be. Thank you.
Okay, very good. So next I'll go to Councilmember Miller.
I think Councilmember Rushing had his audio off first. But if you're ready.
Feel free.
Okay.
It's all good.
Okay, I'll go. You know, I'd hate to lose those palm trees, but I think access to business necessitates that modification. I think it's really important for people to be able to access those businesses that are in that shopping strip. And although it sounds like we've not had any formal complaints about incidences there, if you drive through and look at the planter, there's black tire marks all over it. So people are hitting it, even if they're not reporting it. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. Next, we'll turn to Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, sir. You know, given the chief and commander's comments, I was concerned about Mayor Pro Tem Wright's comments as well regarding just the safety of the turns. I've really been a huge fan of those parkways personally, but that was just like my aesthetics more than anything else. But regardless of where our conversation goes at this point, I do definitely think that we need to move forward with at least an abridged version of that north side parkway to make sure that we've got an in and out from that Burger King parking lot. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Councilmember Robert, anything to add to the conversation?
Yes, I have heard and seen that that does cause some water backup and some flooding in that area. But aside that, I also believe that the palm trees can be easily relocated. We don't have to just throw them away. And I looked at it today, and you're right, Councilmember Miller, there's a lot of black marks on it. I looked at it and I was thinking, I don't see a modification of it, because you need that area. If you're going to make it a right turn lane, you need it to be able to get over there and turn in there without obstructing other traffic and then coming out the same thing. So I think the whole thing would have to be removed. And I sure would hate to see a cost incurred to the Burger King owner, Mr. Marion, who's put up with a lot of stuff with the construction around his business over the years. And I just, you know, if we remove that, we should at least cut the curbs for him to get in and out of there as a city, instead of putting that cost on to him as a business owner. And that's what I would like to see if we were to remove that. He would like to see those cones go away because they look like downtown LA, but I understand the safety reasons for that. He had some ideas, which I'm sure he's going to discuss with the city about that, but I don't see those cones going away, unfortunately. But that's my opinion. If we remove the whole thing, I'd like to see us put the driveway in for them as well. Okay, thank you.
Very good. So it sounds like we have consensus to kind of do a reconsideration of the design in the vicinity of that business. So let me ask just a question, as Councilmember Robert was making his comments, that that kind of sprang to mind, realizing we have a number of driveways in that vicinity. Is there a viable opportunity to combine driveways, realizing that the Yamoto Sushi, Fatty's Pizza, and that complex right there is a fairly limited movement. And so I don't know if it's counterproductive to go towards, or actually Orca Burger is next. So actually, but those three businesses right there all have multiple curb cuts. So let me turn to Ms. Wiggin or Mr. Ray and see if I'm adding too much thought process to the scope by taking a look at more of those driveways.
I'll go ahead and comment on that. I mean, I think that does add a bit to the design effort, but I think it's a valid point. I mean, we shouldn't be too myopic about it. We should make sure that we're not creating yet another potential problem in the future. So I think maybe at least some consideration of the other driveways and other access issues should be part of this.
Okay. Very good. And I think, yeah, obviously not looking at the entirety of West Grand Avenue from a driveway standpoint, but I think with trees and driveways and turning movements, I think it sounds like we've got consensus to do a at least take a relook at that driveway. So I think from Councilmember Robert, his comments about kind of funding of some improvements. I think I would concur if there were available funding for that. So, but I think that would be something that would come back once we know from a city how much that cost would be and what it would entail and what the benefit to a single business might be from that perspective. So whether we from a city could contribute that without a determination of a gift of public funds or something of that nature. So let me turn to the city manager, the city attorney, make sure that my thought process there is going in the right direction.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would just echo that we could build that item into the future discussion when we bring back design options for this work. And then I'll work with the city attorney to make sure that we've crafted that in a way that aligns the city's economic development interests and does not unfairly benefit just one particular business beyond what others could benefit from. But again, we can bring that back to you as part of a later discussion item.
Very good. So, Councilmember Robert, I see you are unmuted. Did you have anything else to add to the conversation? Okay.
No, I'm sorry. I just forgot to mute myself.
No worries. So are we of a consensus on direction to staff on that item? Very good. So it looks like we've got good direction on that. So I'll turn to Ms. Wiggin and see if there's anything else that you needed from us tonight on this item.
That was the direction that we needed.
Very good. Then I will say thank you to you and Mr. Ray for putting this together. Thank you for the presentation. It's always a joy and a pleasure to realize that we have available funds to do projects like this because the community has invested in itself and we've made changes over the course of many years that allows for foundational funding and revenues to come in so that we can make improvements to our city from the foundation up and make it a better place to live, work, and play. So with that, I do have a request to take a quick 10-minute break before the next item. So we will come back. Let's come back at just about 8:20. For that. So just a quick break. Thank you so much. of the Grover Beach City Council and bring it back for item number 9, which is the Five Cities Fire Authority Cost of Service Analysis. The presentation, do introductory comments by the city manager or just turn it right over to Fire Chief Lieberman?
I'll step in, Mr. Mayor, just very briefly. Thank you, Council. What's before you is a report from the Five Cities Fire Authority on the cost of services analysis carried out by the authority and presented to member agencies. Just before I turn it over to Chief Lieberman, just to know that we've been working diligently for the last several years on a lot of efforts to increase the cost effectiveness and funding viability of the authority to balance the funding formula to be more equitable amongst the three member agencies. We had a second amendment to the JPA in 2019, which is predicated on Oceana going to the ballot in 2020 for a tax measure to further invest in fire services, which narrowly failed, leading to a third amendment to the JPA a year ago to give Oceana one more opportunity in 2022 to go forward with that same ballot measure for fire investments. And that really led to where we are today with this analysis that Chief Lieberman will go through with the council and provide any comments or questions to the chief. From there, Chief, the floor is yours.
That was speedy, Mr. Bronson. Good evening again, Mayor and Council. Steve Lieberman, your fire chief. Just a little background before we jump through the presentation. There's been a lot of conversation over the years, as Mr. Bronson has alluded to, about financing the fire authority and how the different member communities pay their fair share and what is a fair share. And all of those discussion points, we've done a lot of analysis. And I think something that we all knew for quite some time was when folks would say, well, why don't we consider a contract with Cal Fire versus the Five Cities Fire Authority? And we just knew anecdotally that it was a better deal to stay local, both financially and in terms of local control. But this analysis literally goes through and proves that point. So, Ms. Sims, if we could just start the presentation. So, again, a little background. Mr. Bronson nailed it. The Arroyo Grande City Council was one of the three member agencies that really expressed interest in looking at different fire and emergency services delivery models and largely drove this deep dive. I consulted with both former and current Cal Fire unit chiefs. Cal Fire is our county fire department. They also provide contract services to the city of Pismo Beach. I also work closely with our city managers and district manager, our working group. I'm really appreciative of the help from Ms. Purcell in Grover Beach, in that I had the administrative finance folks from both Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach helping me through this, just kind of ground truthing my math and my methodology to make sure it was reasonable and it kind of made sense. And lastly, I consulted a lot with the other municipal fire chiefs in our county as I vetted through this process and had and reviewed it with them. Next, please. So this is a slide that I came up, you know, I was brainstorming, what are the different options of fire and emergency services delivery platforms? And I came up with this diagram several years ago and, a JPA with three communities, a JPA maybe with two communities, a contract model, much like Cal Fire and the city of Pismo Beach, everyone going back to individual fire departments, and a fire protection district. And that's a big undertaking. That is a LAFCO process. That is a ballot-driven process. And I'll touch on it a little bit. But not all of these were viable for the analysis at my level. Let's go to the next slide. There's the three boxes showing. It's alluding to something. Next slide, please. So just some kind of definitions as we go through the presentation, you're going to see FCFA, Five Cities Fire Authority, status quo. And that's just using the business model that we're using today based on our current funding amounts. As Mr. Bronson alluded to, with the third amendment to the JPA, our funding levels are frozen pending the Oceano ballot measure in 2022. There's also a definition or a reference to fully staffed. And that's getting three folks at all three fire stations. It's eliminating our reserve firefighter program. it's really focusing on a dedicated fire prevention program. And I know fire prevention sounds like teaching kids about fire safety, but that's also the building fire code plan review process as well. A third battalion chief just gets us to consistent supervision. There's three shifts to keep the organization running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We need that third battalion chief, so there's a supervisor on each shift. And then an administrative manager, just because of the workflow of the organization. So fully staffed just means evolving the organization a little bit and implementing some more of the five-year strategic plan. Next slide. And there's more definitions. So now we just talked about fully staffed, but now we're talking about standalone as well. If you're familiar with the terms of the agreement between the member communities, the city of Arroyo Grande actually provides a lot of administrative support to the fire authority. So when we say fully staffed and standalone, that means we're going to be doing our own accounting functions and our own payroll and IT and HR. And the big question mark is an independent PERS contract, because when the organization was formed, the city of Arroyo Grande agreed to take all of the fire personnel from the other communities and make them technically city of Arroyo Grande staff. And we're all working under the umbrella of the Arroyo Grande PERS contract. Lastly, what does a CAL FIRE local government contract look like, assuming that it's got three-person staffing? So trying to do an apples-to-apples consistent comparison, and it also includes administrative and operational support positions. That's a lot. I'll, again, go through this as we look at the numbers. Here's some models that I didn't really focus on. One of them was the contract customer. So much like CAL FIRE in Pismo Beach, there could be an entity that comes to the Five Cities Fire Authority tomorrow and says, we're interested in doing business with you and having you be our fire and emergency services provider. And the member communities could say, we're not interested in taking on more partners, but we're interested in providing contract services. That's a great conversation to have, but it's to try to do that analysis is really dependent on the level of service that that entity wishes for. So we passed on that today on this analysis. Lastly, the fire protection district, excuse me, while I take a sip of water. The fire protection district, again, it's an independent and self-governed legal entity. So it would require a LAFCO process and formation of this entity, the baseline funding. So we would say, the communities would say, we need a number to start this fire department, and you can pick a number, but that number is going to come from a one-time and recurring property tax shift from your general fund. So we would do the analysis and say, based on the number that we need to fund the fire authority, each member community is going to contribute 12% of the property tax revenue. The downside is you're giving away 12% of your property tax revenue. The upside is you're never giving anything more than 12% of your property tax revenue. So while costs increase in the future, this legal entity with its own governing board would then need to go to the voters and ask for supplemental revenue measures to offset those increasing costs. This really requires an in-depth analysis from a professional consultant. And it was beyond the scope of what I was capable of providing, so we passed on that at this time. All right, the cost models, here we go. So going back to status quo, basically today's numbers, these have been adjusted just a little bit to provide that consistent comparison with the city of Pismo Beach when I get to it. But if you look in the far right first, that's pretty much what our operating budget is. It's off by about $100,000 because of some equipment lease costs that I backed out. But going through and applying a systemic allocation of our fixed operating costs on a per station model, you can see that a one station fire department cost is approximately $2.5 million. There's a two station cost and, of course, a three station cost. Again, status quo, we're still using a reserve firefighter program, which is very problematic. We've got three-person staffing at both the Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach stations, but we still have that two-person staffing challenge at the Oceano station, two battalion chiefs, and no dedicated fire prevention program. So again, This is today's budget, but we've allocated it down to a per station cost of about $2.5 million. Next slide. There'll be a summary, by the way, where you'll get to see all of these comparisons together. Again, so now we go to full staffing at all three stations, three-person staffing. We have the dedicated supervision built in, the fire prevention program. We've eliminated that reserve firefighter program. You can see the costs go up to about $7.4 million, and the per-station cost goes to $3.1. Next slide. All right, so the standalone. And this one I didn't break out on a per station basis. The methodology is very similar, but you can see we're looking at about another $300,000 or so for a fully standalone organization, not reliant on any of the member communities for administrative support. Next slide. So CAL FIRE. So a contract with CAL FIRE in reviewing the Pismo Beach contract with both prior unit chiefs and the current unit chiefs, they were very concerned about the lack of administrative support for the contract and basically said if we were going to enter into a local government contract today, this is what would require. And it would be, you know, additional division chief position, additional battalion chief position, and some other costs that aren't currently in the Pismo Beach contract. So again, trying to be consistent with three-person staffing in the administrative support, you can see a three-person station cost with the CAL FIRE contracts nearing $8.4 million or about $3.7 million per station. Next slide, please. So here they all are together. Whether you start at the far right or you start in the first column, you can see even at the fully staffed level of Five Cities Fire Authority, it's still nearly $1 million cheaper a year to maintain that local control with Five Cities Fire versus signing that state contract with CAL FIRE. One of the biggest unknowns with a CAL FIRE contract is their labor costs are negotiated at the state level. So we work closely with CAL FIRE employees. We get along great with them, but when they go into labor negotiations, it's not local, it's at the state level. And when those negotiations wrap up, whatever the outcome of those labor negotiations are, is the cost, and it's passed on to their contract customers. So just quickly showing you the cost savings and the differentials between these models. I've presented this to Aurora Grandy. I wanted to make sure you saw it as well. But the caveat with this is, here's some numbers. So you could make a policy decision and say, you know what? I'm good. $2.5 million for a status quo single station fire department. That gets close to what I'm paying today, and I'm very comfortable with that. But I just want to caution you and encourage you to look at some of the data I'm going to share with you, because the numbers are part of it, and the data is the other piece. So let's jump into the next slide. All right. So we're going to talk about service delivery, and why not talk about metrics when it's approaching 9 p.m. at night? I'll try to keep it brief and at a high level for the council and the community. Next slide, please. All right, I'm sorry, this one's a little funny looking at the bottom, but this is 3 years of response call data. And I'm really going to focus on 2020 data as I take you through further metrics. But if you look at the gray and white boxes on the top section there, you're going to see 2018 through 2020, total Five Cities Fire Authority. And then you're going to see Arroyo Grande's call volume. So, for example, in Five Cities Fire Authority, we ran 3,700 calls in 2020. 1,963 of those were within the community of Arroyo Grande. 1,077 were within Grover Beach, 679 in Oceano. We add in our mutual and automatic aid response as well. You pick up another 260 calls. So we're approaching 4,000 calls by the end of 2020, which was a 10% increase. We're used to seeing a 3% increase. Obviously, we can talk about COVID being a big driver in that, as well as fire season last year. But if you look at going back to Grover Beach, which is the second gray box in this slide, you'll see Grover Beach just saw a moderate increase in call volume from the previous year. Arroyo Grande saw a significant one, as did Oceano. the last little section there that's got some font kind of in the way is showing the percentage of calls per community. So in 2020, Arroyo Grande had nearly 53% of the total call volume, Grover Beach 29%, and Oceano 18.3%. That percentage distribution of call volume is one of the factors that goes into the funding allocation, and we're always interested in seeing that. If you quickly look up those columns, though, you'll see the percentages don't change all that much. They're pretty consistent as far as spread of call volume. I'm going to take a breath and ask you if there's any questions so far. Otherwise, I'm going to keep going.
Very good, Chief. Thanks for that pause. Let's see if by unmuting of yourselves, if there's any members of the council that have questions. And don't see any so far. So, and I don't see Mayor Pro Tem Bright, but I don't see her line unmuted. So, Chief, we will let you continue.
Excellent. Thank you. Let's go to the next slide. All right, so talking about these models and the pros and cons, a single station model, it's intended for a community that experiences a very limited call for service volume that can be adequately handled with one engine company. And an engine company is one crew in a fire station. So we talked about three people on an engine. This is one of those three-person crews. The downside of a single station model is as your call volume ramps up, you're going to become very reliant on asking other neighboring agencies to help you. And automatic aid and mutual aid, I can talk about the differentiation between those two, but it's always got to be feel equitable. The agreement has to seem fair between the neighboring agencies. It's not meant to be a subsidy. Just as an example, when I was pretty new to the organization, I noticed that Five Cities Fire was running a lot of calls into East Arroyo Grande, into the unincorporated county areas. And when I really took a look at the numbers, you know, in a given year, we were running 400 calls into the county, yet the county was providing less than 40 calls into our service area. So it wasn't equitable. And I brought it to the board of directors and we renegotiated the contract with CAL FIRE just for that very reason. They need a station in East Arroyo Grande and they'll need to figure that out. Just an example. Again, single station model, I already talked about those things. Let's go to the next slide. So a multi-station model. So a couple of things. There's a phrase in fire called time and wait. So let's just say there's a structure fire. That single station model is going to respond to that structure fire and hope that their automatic aid partners in the neighboring communities are available to come help them. The beauty about a multi-station model is we have multiple crews available to respond simultaneously. They're all trained to the same levels. They know how to use all of the tools that we employ. And that initial response of three engine companies to that structure fire is a great benefit at mitigating and stopping and slowing damage. And helping people from avoiding injuries or worse. It also provides that capacity. So yesterday with the wind events was crazy all throughout the county. Well, we had appears to be some Mylar balloons that got wrapped into some live power lines over by Elm Street Park, and it started a fire and it took out power and it dropped charge lines into the street. Well, while that was going on, we also had a small fire turned out to be in Pismo City Limits, adjacent to the Oxford Suites on El Camino, and a medical call. So having those multiple resources so you can kind of break them off and respond to other calls is very beneficial. I already talked about consistent training levels. Everybody knows what their job is. And then that economy of scale. So whether you're a single fire station or a multi-fire station model, you still have that operational administrative staff. You still have a fire chief, supervisors in the mid-level, your admin folks. You're going to have that expense whether you're running one station or multiple stations. So there's definitely an economy of scale by sharing that cost. Next slide. Okay, the pie charts. So I've taken the three community fire stations, and this may be difficult to see, and I can definitely explain it to you in more detail later. But what this shows, it's beginning to show the the nexus of the benefit of the multi-station model. So if you start with Arroyo Grande and you look at the blue, the station that's located in Arroyo Grande stays in Arroyo Grande 84% of the time. If you look at Grover Beach has some capacity. So Grover Beach stays in Grover Beach 56% of the time, but still has some excess capacity. So they're in Arroyo Grande 34% of the time, Oceano 6% of the time. All of them are providing some level of automatic or mutual aid. And if you go to Oceano, you can see about half of Oceano's total calls that station responds to are in Oceano. They're in Grover Beach. Think about the geographic locations of these stations. The Oceano station can get to portions of Grover Beach faster than the Grover Beach station can. And the same for Arroyo Grande. So again, starting to show these stations with the capacity that they have and that they'll be able to support those simultaneous calls for service or get to a geographic place faster than another station. Next, please. And there's more. I've already kind of chatted about this, about capacity of the fire stations. Let's just go to the next slide. All right, community benefit. So this is just another way of telling the same story. If we pick on Arroyo Grande because they're the closest to the left, and we look at 2017 to 2020, we can see the calls for service in their community. So we can see that 57% of the time in 2020, Arroyo Grande's station was in Arroyo Grande, but the others were in their community 43% of the time. So the orange block is going to show the benefit of other stations coming to help one of the communities. Grover Beach, 21% of the time, a different station was taking care of the community in Grover Beach in 2020. Next slide. Oh, go ahead, click it again. All right, so community benefit. This is simultaneous calls for service by community, and they're increasing, as you can imagine. That's what the bar chart on the lower right shows. But 28% of the time, there's simultaneous calls for service going on in Arroyo Grande. So right now, we've got simultaneous calls. We had one in Arroyo Grande at Walmart at the same time. We had another one for someone having difficulty breathing in Oceano on Strand Way. So it's happening more and more. Thankfully, we've got multiple stations with multiple resources, but you can see that having those multiple resources is helping to address this multiple 911 issue. The city of Paso Robles was really getting impacted by this, and that's why their council voted to support the construction of a third fire station and additional staffing. It was really the simultaneous 911 calls and their inability to get to these calls in a timely manner. Next slide. Findings. So between the numbers and then the data, I believe the findings show that FCFA is an efficient and cost-effective regional service delivery platform for fire and emergency services. I believe the data reinforces the benefit of having those multiple stations. You know, the closest resource for that 911 call goes without regard of community boundary. It doesn't always work that way. And depth and response. I was talking about time and wait, depth and response for those simultaneous emergency calls as well. Go ahead. So again, we're at that tipping point with some of the member communities. When you look at the increasing call volume, the findings are the model's working as is. Any one member community avoids the need to build and staff a second fire station. Yes, Five Cities Fire Authority will require additional investment to finish what was started in 2010, but the structure of the organization is showing value. I believe that's it, Wendy. Let's see. Oh, there's more. I mentioned that Oceano is going back to the ballot box in June of 2022. They're taking another shot at their revenue measure. And again, Mr. Bronson, Whitney McDonald, and Roy Grandy, Will Clemens, and Oceano, we meet fairly frequently to talk about what's going on in the communities, to talk about the Third Amendment to the JPA, to start talking about what happens should the ballot measure pass or should the ballot measure fail. There's language in there that drives what's called a wind down process, but we're doing a lot of the actual work now to talk about what could happen or how things should look. Part of it is the JPA was formed in 2010. It needs some cleanup language. What does a reconstituted JPA look like given the outcome? the potential negative outcome of an Oceano election, do we look at contract relationships, other funding strategies based on a desired level of service? The last one is the SAFER grant is part of the Assistance for Firefighters grant program through FEMA. If we made the case to say we need to get our staffing to this level by 2022 or 2023 or whatever that year was, we could go back and apply for a SAFER grant. And I believe we would be very successful. And a SAFER grant pays for all costs of these fire suppression employees for a 3-year period. So if we said we need another 5 bodies to get to 3-0 staffing at every fire station, we could go through a SAFER grant program and it would give the communities that 3-year buffer to do their financial projections and lock up the funding for when the grant period is over. So that's definitely something we're going to be talking more about with the managers group. Look at that. I quit talking. Thank you so much. I'd love to answer any questions.
You're on mute, Mr. Mayor.
Very good. Sorry about that. I was having trouble unmuting myself there. So, Chief, thank you for that presentation. So before I turn it to questions from the council, I will remind folks that if you want to call in for public comment on this item, please do so at 805-321-6639. So, Chief, just a couple quick questions, because thank you for the presentation. This is my my second time seeing it, so I just want to say thank you for kind of condensing it down all into very understandable components. So currently, Grover Beach pays just over $2 million, correct? And so your single payer, or so your single station model, saves the city of Grover Beach approximately $500,000 each year, realizing that that is a flat funding revenues at the moment until we can figure out what Oceano is doing with their ballot measure. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, from the fiscal side of the analysis, that's a fair and accurate statement.
Okay, very good. And perhaps you can just touch on the recent events in Oceano and where the station was closed for multiple days in a row due to staffing concerns. Maybe you can kind of share how the community was still being protected by fire staff during that time.
Certainly. So the Five Cities Fire Authority and every other full-time fire department has seen a decline in the availability to recruit and retain reserve firefighters. These are part-time employees that don't receive benefits. The rate of pay is always a challenge. Somebody told me to go look at what the starting wage is at In-N-Out Burger currently, which is $17. And that's the top end of what our reserve firefighter driver operators make. So it's a tough, as we all know, the Central Coast is a tough place to sustain ourselves. And so these reserve firefighting folks, this is what they want to do for a career. They're getting great experience. They're getting additional certificates, but they have to have other jobs in order to support themselves and their families. That's one challenge with the reserve program. The state of California requires, and for all the right reasons, requires them to have the same level of training as a career firefighter as well. So there's that balance between work, some time for family, and maintaining their skills. The larger issue, I believe, is the retirement of the second and last portion of the baby boom generation. And what that's doing is it's creating huge opportunity for entry-level positions in the fire service and every other type of business that's had that upper middle management of a layer of employees that have been in positions for a long time. The city of San Luis Obispo has 8 new recruit firefighters in their academy, Paso 4. The city of Santa Maria is looking between 6 and 8. So just in our local job market, you'll see that there's opportunity for these folks, if they're really driven, to test and interview, and they'll be picked up somewhere. So the reserve firefighter program has really been struggling for years. Paso Robles eliminated theirs, as did a couple of others. And I know that there's agencies that are seeing the writing on the wall that they won't be able to sustain this program. We have three positions at the Oceano Station. It takes three positions to cover a station 24 hours a day. There's three shifts of employees that work. They work 48 hours on, they get 4 days off, they come back. So I need three reserve firefighters to keep a reserve firefighter there every single day of the week. We lost one position. So we had a couple of firefighters working overtime to try to fill that third shift. And then I was fortunate enough to hire one of the reserves into a full-time position. We just did some in-house promotions. And Stephen Hensley is now a career full-time firefighter. That left one reserve firefighter. Paul Collada, who's been a longtime employee, goes back to being a volunteer with Oceano Fire, but he also works full-time for the state of California, so he can work his shift, but no others. And what that meant to Oceano with the failure of the ballot measure was the station was going to be closed more, and it was only going to be open for one shift. And we were trying to figure out how to accommodate that. We were running task force models, so one station would run two smaller crews and two pieces of equipment just in case some high priority call for service, like cardiac arrest, for example, came into Oceano and they would split off. But otherwise, for safety, we wanted to keep these crews together. So did an analysis with our treasurer, went to the board and pitched an idea of using some of our fund balance, so some of our reserve funding, which is always a concern. But we created a new fire engineer position with the support of the fire authority board. And so now the Oceano Station is open, guaranteed to be open at least two shifts a week. And that third shift, we're still running a task force response model. So I hope that answered the question, Mayor. But we're doing everything we can to sustain a consistent level of service with the funding constraints that we have.
Very good. So I appreciate that explanation of how Oceano is continuing to be staffed while both Rover and AG stations have a minimum of three member staffing throughout the course of all shifts. So let me turn to other members of the council, see if anyone has any questions. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you do have any questions for the chief. Looks like Councilmember Miller, go ahead and ask your questions, please.
Thank you. A clarifying question. It sounds like from your presentation that a multi-station model is or would be the most efficient for us, but there is increased cost for staffing. However, it sounds like there's an opportunity to apply for the SAFER grant to provide for or to cover those additional employee expenses. Is that correct? I just want to make sure I understood that.
So let me just back up a couple of steps. Great question. When the fire authority was formed, there was an understanding that we were going to evolve over time. And we adopted a five-year strategic plan. And the goal was to get three-person staffing and adequate supervision onboarded. And we just needed a plan to get there. We started by transitioning to full-time firefighting staff and phasing out the reserve firefighter program. We were able to do that over 2 years in Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. And when it was time to do the same thing in Oceano is when Oceano realized they needed to go to the voters. So we had a plan that was being implemented with a prioritization of that five-year plan. To answer your question is, yes, some additional investment is going to be needed to get us to where we need to be based on community expectation. And the SAFER grant will allow a safety net for up to 3 years of funding for those fire suppression personnel, while the communities identify funding for ongoing cost after the grant period.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Very good, thank you. Let's see if other members of the council have questions. Not seeing anybody unmute themselves. Let me turn to our city clerk and see if there's any members of the public who have joined us for public comment on this item by calling in at 805-321-6639. Madam City Clerk?
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good, thank you. I will go ahead and close public comments and bring it back for any last comments or questions from the council. This is a receive and file. So unless you're looking for some direction from us tonight, Chief or City Manager Bronson, which I think this is just a receive and file, correct?
That's correct.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright, looks like you might have some comments.
I do. Thank you. I just want to say that I want to thank the chief for his very comprehensive presentation, which left me with no questions. And I also want to thank him and his staff for all that they do for our community. Luckily, I have not had to have them come to my house recently, but when I did, they were always there so quickly, and they too were always very compassionate and very professional. And so I, for one, am a huge fan of the Five Cities Fire Authority. And so I just wanted to publicly thank them for all that they do. And that was it. So thank you very much for the time.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Rushing. Looks like he has some comments to share.
Very briefly, but I just wanted to say thank you again to the chief. And literally 3 seconds before his slide came up that used the word economy of scale, I had literally written that a piece of paper. So I think we're thinking along the same lines. The flexibility and capability that this entire fire authority gives our community is an incredible value, and I do thank you.
Very good. Looks like I think I saw Councilmember Robert. You had your hand raised, so go ahead and provide some your comments, please.
Okay, well, thank you, Chief. That was a very good report and gave us a lot of understanding on the cost of the operations that you're challenged with, and we appreciate all that you do. And yes, to echo my fellow council members, you do a fabulous job, and all of you are very compassionate, and we feel safe knowing that you're minutes away, literally minutes away. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Very good. I'll go ahead and echo the comments of, of my colleagues and say thank you to the chief for the presentation, and thank you to the staff of the Five Cities Fire Authority for keeping all three communities safe. So I think just one closing comment is that the Five Cities Fire Authority is slightly over 10 years old, and it was created with a vision that it needed to provide protection to all three communities. And there was always an understanding, I think, that some people have a tendency to forget that it was born out of a necessity, but it still has some growing to do in order to be what the community expects of it. I mean, the time for calls of service, the need for calls of service are being addressed by the fire authority staff and the equipment. And we consistently ask more of our fire department than I think we ever envisioned at the very beginning, between mutual aid and cats in trees and various other there's a term that the chief has for it, and it's escaping my tongue at the moment, but it's basically a community need, and a community it's filling a requirement that we as community members expect someone to fill. And in the absence of a group to do that, the fire department and its staff have taken on that that function and on that usability and on that viability of service levels that the community have come to expect and appreciate. And I think realizing that does always come at a appropriate price and appropriate staffing levels, we as a community have chosen to fund and to staff and to provide equipment to the fire authority at levels that meet that level of service. And as we continue to grow as three communities, I think all of us need to participate to the appropriate levels that we can and that we will, so that we can continue to have that viable, functioning, safety-driven, appropriately sized and appropriately resourced Five Cities Fire Authority for now and for years to come. So, I mean, there's that planning horizon that we need to do as communities in order to provide this service. And I think the chief has kind of laid out a path for us to get there. And I think we as a community have committed to that. And I think our partners in Arroyo Grande and Oceano will in my expectation, continue to do the same. And so I appreciate the Chiefs coming here tonight, providing this this background, and we'll look forward to seeing what Oceano can accomplish with their ballot measure in June of 2022. So with that, I'll turn it back to the Chief for any closing comments on this item.
No, thank you. I appreciate the ability and the opportunity to present this information to you. And thank you for the kind words, and have a great evening. Thank you again.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. I appreciate that. So that will close item number 9 this evening. So I will check with our city clerk, see if there's any members of the public that want to talk under our second opportunity for public comment tonight.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public comment at this part of the agenda and bring it back to the council for our council committee reports. So I will turn to Councilmember Rushing for his reports first.
I have no reports at this time. Thank you.
Very good. Next, I'll go to Councilmember Robert.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a report for my committee. The RAC, we received a presentation on the drought in agricultural in San Luis Obispo County for members of the San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau. The presentation this month focused on agricultural operations and productions. The committee, we just listened, there's no action necessary. The presentation by the panel focused on the effects of the drought on the production of in the phase of agricultural, the vineyards, the ranching. We listened, no action was necessary. The committee will hear the final installments of this drought and agriculture presentation during the December 1st meeting, and I'll bring you the results of that. We also received an update from the staff regarding the San Simeon Community Service District Proposition 1 grant and considered action. Staff recommended to advise the board to seek removal for the San Simeon CSD's project from the Proposition 1 implementation grant agreement. Staff reminded the committee that removing the project now would enable these funds to be added to the county's availability grant award for the soon-to-be-released final funding round. Committee will take staff's recommendation into consideration. We also considered endorsing an application for an alternative member, which would be called the environmental at-large position. And we listened to the report in regards to that. Our next regular meeting is December 1st, 2021, 1:30 p.m. And it's a Zoom meeting. Anyone's welcome to attend. And you can also find the details of all these acronyms that I'm spewing out to you at www.slocounty.ca.gov. Yeah, that's www.slocounty.cal.gov. And that's it. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that report. Next, I'll turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. I had a SLOCOG meeting in an RTA, or SLO RTA. That was mainly closed session. SLOCOG, though, something that was quite interesting to me, there was a question brought up regarding green bike lanes in San Luis Obispo. Member of the public had called in and had said that two recent bike accidents, and I think one was a fatality, if I'm not mistaken, had occurred inside these green bike lanes. And he was asking if maybe there should be some kind of a study or some kind of inquiry as to if this is happening in other cities as well. Possibly, is it creating a false sense of security with people on their bicycles in these green bike lanes, thinking that, you know, they're safe, they're in a green bike zone, a green bike lane? Or on the other hand, you know, there is a a pretty high propensity for these green bike lanes in San Luis, the city of San Luis. Are drivers just thinking, you know, they see them, it's just like anything else, and maybe they're not paying a whole lot of attention to these green bike lanes. I just thought that was really, it really kind of struck me as something that we might want to look at and consider, because we've got bike lanes that we're talking about on South Oak Park, on Grand Avenue, and anyway, so it was really something that I thought was quite interesting, an interesting thing to ponder. And that was really, well, I had a Lucy Amar school bond measure meeting, but that's not part of this council. So that was pretty much it for me. Thank you.
Very good. A quick question for you on the SLOCOG determination. So are they going to move forward with a study, or is there another organization? Because I don't know how useful River Beach doing its own study would be unless it was part of a much larger discussion that we could actually maybe provide information to, but not drive the study.
Yes. No, I don't believe there's going to be an official study. I think they're just going to do an inquiry with other cities just to see if they're having kind of the same type of issues.
Okay. So maybe from that perspective, excuse me, as we turn to the city manager, perhaps we can just have our police force, if there is calls for service on a bicycle accidents, maybe perhaps just identify whether it is in a green bike lane and share that information with others upon request. Does that sound like a fair?
But I would.
Like a,
I'm sorry.
Okay. Good. Go ahead, Mayor Pro Tem.
I was just going to say, I certainly will bring back the information that they glean from the city of San Luis as well as other cities regarding that matter.
Okay. Maybe at this point we wait for that information to come back and we kind of turn that over to the chief and his crew and see if there's any information that comes out of there. So, okay, very good. So I did not have any committee reports to provide this evening. So it takes us to League of California Cities, and I did not have any policy committees or other league matters that I'm aware of to share here. Next, we'll come up to council communications, and I'll turn it over to, I'll start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright on any council communications tonight.
Yes, well, I had one, I'm not sure that if we all received this, but it was regarding McDonald's, and they are giving all educators, administrators, and school staff free breakfast. It started, I guess, today, but through October 15th. So you just have to go to McDonald's during breakfast hours and they'll give you a free breakfast if you are a school, if you're a teacher, administrator, school staff. So that people might want to know that. And then I did have another communication regarding code compliance at Vaughn's, but she contacted the our code compliance officer who handled that. So I think that's it for me. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate that. And I just realized with the hand up for Councilmember Miller, perhaps I missed your council communication, your committee reports. That was inadvertent on my part. Were you raising your hand for committee reports or for council communications or both?
Well, both. I'll start with the reporting back from the Homeless Services Oversight Council. I'll share that the committee voted to approve staff recommendations to award funding of over $150,000 in California's Emergency Solutions Grant Continuum of Care allocation for a joint project with Five Cities Homeless Coalition, CAPSLO, and ECHO. Funds are to be used to support homeless prevention, rapid rehousing efforts, and emergency shelter operations for the county. I also want to mention regarding eviction prevention that in order for residents to qualify for eviction prevention extensions, they must submit an application for the state rental assistance, I believe by the end of this month. And if an application is submitted by the deadline, residents cannot be evicted for non-payment until March of 2022. Residents who apply for assistance after the deadline will no longer qualify for eviction prevention. So we want to make sure the public gets that information. And then moving on to council communication. I believe that 32% of our residents are Spanish speaking, and I want to be able to have the council consider potential of translating city communication in order to reach more of our residents and engage more of our resident population. Thank you.
Very good. So actually with that, let me turn to our city manager and see if there's been any discussions internally about opportunities for translation services or what we currently do as a city. After hearing that, one of my initial thoughts would be when we are back and having someone lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance or the flag salute, perhaps doing that in Spanish or see. But let me turn over to the city manager and see what we as a city currently do and if there was more that we could undertake for that.
Thank you, Mary Lee, council members. Currently, our translation approach is our website does offer a language translation, not just in Spanish, but in dozens of other languages as one approach that we've taken just in the last couple of years. We don't universally translate materials, flyers, documents for every meeting, every program we offer. We do it on a case-by-case basis where there could be potential applicability for a very broad audience. One example that we are doing right now is our council districting process, where there is a requirement under state law that we do translate into different languages. I'll note that we, and the demographics are beyond my knowledge right now, but because we don't have the degree of primary first language Spanish-speaking residents, we don't have to translate everything, but we're choosing to as a city. And so you see all of our flyers and documents are translated in Spanish for the council districting process, as well as a QR code to bring up a website in Spanish, even though we don't technically have to because of the percentage that is, it's a primary language spoken on a day-to-day basis. So I think beyond that, I'd be looking for the council direction, because the direction could be quite broad. If you were looking at universal translation, that would be a significant time and resource impact on the city. And we'd have to seek council direction and potential resources and how to do that, or to be more selective based on the particular case, need, meeting, program, et cetera.
Very good. Appreciate that that explanation. So perhaps as a discussion topic, realizing that we do most of our kind of our prioritization around our major city goals. So would this be a appropriate topic to maybe bring back at a kind of a mid-year budget review topic, or maybe as a budget planning for next year? Or where could a discussion about this appropriately land?
I think what I would suggest is, if the council provided direction for us to look at this, we would bring back an item to the council for discussion to talk about the resources, talk about the applicability. From a timing standpoint, it would be early next year, just given what's in store with our agendas coming up in the next few months. And that would, by extension, lead into the mid-year budget discussion and goal-setting conversations in January, February of next year.
Very good. Let's see if we have a consensus for the council to have that discussion. Looking like we've got consensus, so we'll give that as a rough direction to staff to kind of come back with that. And if there's questions along the way, go ahead and kind of ask us in either council member updates from the city manager or we'll look forward to that discussion in early 2022. Very good. Councilmember Miller, any other council communications?
I did receive an email about Faro and the striping or restriping that might be needed because I believe the striping is faded and there is some concern about safety with folks driving in the bike lane. But I believe in checking with City Manager Bronson, that's a road that's not currently planned for rehab, but we'll keep an eye on it and we'll plan for it in the future.
Very good. Appreciate those communications. I'll turn to Councilmember Robert and see if he has any communications.
Just a couple. One, had a couple more people ask about the pickleball court. I did tell them that it's in the Park and Recreation's considering and looking for a place to put pickleball. Everyone seems to be the great fad right now. Anyway, also, we all have a very dear and old friend to not only the city of Grover Beach, to this council, Johnny Weissong, and he's hanging in there, but he called today and to talk about a couple things on the boardwalk, and he said one of the boards are loose and checking with City Manager Bronson. That's state property, which I thought it was, so we turned it over to them, and he requested if he could have a bench with his name there. So as Mr. Bronson said, that's state property, and as we can certainly request it, but we could have more control over our own city. And I would like, for one, I don't know if the rest of the council would agree, if maybe we could give him a small bench somewhere in one of our parks as a community citizen that really, I think he's made a difference, and a lot of times he stirs the pot, if you will, but he has good points, and he's been very, very, vocal on his opinions. So I don't know if that's something that the rest of the council would agree on or like to discuss.
Great idea. Let me check in with Mr. Bronson. I believe we had some discussion about either memorial or honorary benches that we've never come to a conclusion on, if I remember correctly. But it is pretty much a privately driven program for various reasons. Is that a
that makes sense? No, I understand where you're going with that. Yeah, because okay. It's something the city really shouldn't put their funds in. But yeah, to maybe a fundraiser to purchase the bench and place it in as a private or nonprofit would be acceptable. I agree.
Okay. Is there anything you want to add to that, Mr. Bronson?
You're correct that we don't have a formal policy on this. We've talked about it, but we haven't gotten it done, just given other priorities. And I would agree that if there was interest in this, it would be privately organized, but we could allow for it in a city facility with council direction to consider it.
Very good. Okay. Great. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Rushing for any communications that he might want to share.
I don't particularly have any. I just wanted to thank my colleagues on the council and staff for one of our consent agenda items today, the child care assistance funding agreement. My daughter spent years in the Boys and Girls Club after school, and they're an amazing, amazing operation. And I hear only amazing things about the YMCA. And this past year and going forward, I know childcare is huge, huge. And the fact that Grover Beach was able to step up, help out is hopefully going to help out a lot of people. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Very good. So I've got two communications tonight. I just want to say congratulations to our local businesses of the year that were handed out last Wednesday night, where for the first time in person at a public event, all five council members, along with our city manager, were in the same location. So it's great to see everybody virtually, but it was really great to see everybody in person at the Chamber of Commerce annual dinner, where the Spoon Trade and Grover Beach Sourdough were awarded the 2021 Business of the Year well-deserved and very much appreciated by both Brooke and Jacob Town during their speech. So great work on their parts, and look forward to continuing to enjoy their food and their service for many years to come. So the other communication I have this evening is on a much more serious note, in the fact that as the chief mentioned throughout his presentation, as the high winds that are occurring in our area, PG&E has released several notifications for public safety power shutoffs in our vicinity. I think through happenstance, Grover Beach has not been affected by one yet, but that doesn't mean that we aren't going to be affected by one. And so I strongly urge everyone to have a plan. And so to make sure that you can be without power for a significant amount of time, whether that's through candles, flashlights, ice for refrigerators and water in your sinks and tubs. But if you go to readyslow.org and or PG&E's websites, there are opportunities for a program for preparation for you and your family for the event of a public safety power shutoff or any other natural event that may lead to a loss of service in some fashion. So I highly encourage you as a family or as an individual to make a plan and to move forward with safety of yourself and your family. So with that, I will turn it over to our city manager for any questions, comments, reports that he may have for us this evening.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. Just a few quick items given the hour. First, just to convey to the council that City Hall is now open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday. So we are resuming the full day hours again on those days of the week, given our front counter staffing and where COVID is across the community. We are closed on Fridays for the time being to allow our staff more time to process the applications, permits, and all the materials that we get in over the course of the week. So again, 8 to 5 Monday through Thursday, and those hours will be consistent and constant going forward. Secondly, as Ms. Wigan mentioned earlier tonight, we have a ton of capital projects going on across the community. A lot of street improvements in South Grover Beach across numerous streets, water main improvements all across the community. Also, South Oak Park Boulevard will start construction next month from West Grand Avenue to Mentone Avenue. So you're going to see some signs coming forward soon alerting the public to these upcoming projects. That's going to be a significant traffic impact as we navigate on that street, but we're going to create a delightful, beautiful boulevard from Grand Avenue to Mentone Avenue, one vehicle lane, continuous bike lane, on-street parking, landscape median. It really is a glimpse into the Oak Park Boulevard of the future that we're creating over the next several years. And then lastly, we recently had a Grover Beach cleanup event that drew about 25 community members to our parks and Grand Avenue on Saturday morning earlier this month. We had a mix of people from all across the community, including a number of newcomers who had just moved to the city from all over the state, all over the country, and were looking to give back and get involved in their community. It was great to talk to them and help to share where we are as a community and hear from them. They all had a lot of optimism, positive vibes. They all want to get involved in their new, beautiful beachfront community. So it was great to be able to have this event for the city. And thanks to the council members who were able to join us that day. And we look forward to an annual event going forward. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those updates, Mr. Bronson. So, and always, I had a conversation with our city attorney earlier this week, and he's always been reticent to say anything during his comments and his reports, because it's like he always does such a good job of keeping the city out of trouble. But I did want to give him an opportunity to see if there's any reports and comments that he wanted to share with us this evening. And you are still muted, sir.
Actually, I do have one this evening.
Okay.
You may read that the Friends of the Dunes has filed another lawsuit. It's the fourth in a series of many. We were named in the first three. Apparently, they got tired of naming us, and we are not named in this one, either as a defendant or as a real party in interest. So we're not a party to this one. So and the others are pretty much resolved from our perspective. So just wanted to apprise you that if you do read anything about it, doesn't involve us. So everything else is good.
Very good. Thank you for those reports and comments. And so with that, we don't have any closed session this evening. And so we will adjourn until I believe it's October 25th for our next meeting. Thank you, everyone. Good work tonight.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.